across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Well, Brexiteers, it has all kicked off today, hasn't it? And, same Brexiteers, you are in for one heck of a struggle to stop this Parliament overturning the referendum and stopping Boris Johnson exiting the EU on October the 31st. My name is Nick Dubois, and thank you for joining me this evening. We have a packed show for you, and rightly so, on this hugely important day. Coming up, what has actually happened in Parliament today? We had grandees of the Conservative Party rebelling with a touch of class. Who else but Sir Nicholas Soames?
I want to make clear that I have always believed that the referendum result must be honoured, and indeed I've voted for the withdrawal agreement on every occasion that has been presented to the House, which is more than can be said for my right honourable friend the Prime Minister, the Leader of the House and other members of the Cabinet, whose serial disloyalty has been such an inspiration to so many of us. Mr Speaker.
And less grandly, we had chickens on the Prime Minister's mind.
But there's only one chlorinated chicken that I can see in this house, and he's on that bench.
And amongst all this Brexit talk, we had the Chancellor splashing the cash as if he had found a magic money tree.
I can announce today that no department will be cut next year. Every single government department has had its budget for day-to-day spending increased at least in line with inflation. That's what I mean by the end of austerity, Mr. Speaker. Britain's hard work paying off. A country living within its means, able to spend more on the things that matter.
Well, we never splashed the cash when I was in that place, but are we any clearer on what is happening with Brexit, and have the chances of leaving the EU on the October the 31st receded or not? Joining us in this hour will be Baroness Diane Hayter, Labour's lead Brexit spokeswoman and deputy leader in the Lords, who, unlike their colleagues in the House of Commons, are just getting to work now at this late hour. And they will be working non-stop, quite possibly, until 10:01 Friday night. Maybe Baroness Hayter can help explain why and what she hopes will happen. Later, if Boris Johnson gets his way, we'll have a general election soon. But is that a good idea? Will it return a majority government? And will we be, dare I say it, strong and stable? To help answer this, Professor John Curtis, later in the hour, and much, much more. Joining me, we have John O'Connell, CEO, Taxpayers Alliance, here in the studio with me. I'm sure he's got something to say about the spending review. John, lovely to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on, Nick.
And on my right, which is probably not a description Will likes, Will Drive from Our Future, Our Choice. Will, great to have you here. And I think you're staying the duration, aren't you? Unless you fall asleep at some point. You're more than welcome to stay as long as you like. But gentlemen, before I give you the chance to engage any further, I would like, if I may, to go straight to Baroness Diane Hayter, Labour's Brexit spokeswoman in the House of Lords, because I know, Baroness, you've got a lot of work to do by the sounds of things.
I have. We've done a good few hours already. We started at 3:30. And I think we might be still going at 3:30 in the morning and even on and on and on.
Well, look,
and given we're not in the first flush of youth over this end, this is quite a challenge.
Well, look, bravo to you all doing your duty. But look, can I just give a little bit of context here, and then I will hope you will be able to explain briefly what is going on, if it's at all clear. We've had in the House of Commons this unusual situation where the MPs can move really fast to deliver a law, a bill that goes through, rather, the House of Commons and all its stages in one day. It has now gone up to you in the House of Lords, and the theory is that you will look at it, pass judgment on it, offer some counsel and advice maybe, but broadly speaking, you would seek to return it back to the House of Commons unamended by probably the end of the week so that it has a chance of coming law. Is that what the wish would be for those who've put this bill up, of which opponents will describe as the surrender bill to the EU, and I think you'll probably have another description for it. But have I broadly summarised that correctly?
It is, and actually it doesn't matter what sort of bill it is. It could be a bill we didn't like, it could be a bill we do like, but the unelected House of Lords traditionally never, never, never blocks a bill that the elected House has sent to us. So we're only trying to do what we normally do. The House of Commons sends us a bill, and then we do, as you absolutely correctly describe it, we scrutinise it, sometimes we amend it, and we deal with it. But we never, it is not part of our job to block a bill that's come from the elected House of Commons.
And this is potentially quite controversial, isn't it? Because there has been talk that opponents of the bill, and I declare my colours, I'm not a fan of the bill, but that's neither here nor there. But opponents of the bill in the Lords have implied that they might filibuster it, or to most sort of ordinary
they've
people.
Already, they've been doing it. No, they're not just going to. We started at 3:30 and they're still at it. What happened is that, sorry, it sounds a bit techie, but we also had to do a business motion to make sure that we could even take the bill, because when the...
But you couldn't time limit it, could you? Was that what you... Did you try
and
do that?
Well, we couldn't. There's two things. We had to, first of all, make sure that we would take it, because it's the government that decides what business comes to the House of Lords, and we didn't even know that they would allow us to take it at all. And so the first thing we do was have to make sure that we took it. And then, because last time we did one of these bills, there were hundreds of amendments to try and filibuster and stop us.
Isn't it true?
Doing
it. You've got 101 amendments already, haven't you?
I think it's 120, actually. But that's not to the bill. That is simply to our motion that we should take the bill. And also, in that motion, we've said we must allow good time for the bill. As you've explained, it went through the House of Commons very fast. We thought we should do it in our normal way of giving a very thorough look of it. So we have suggested we do the whole of Thursday on what's called the second reading of the bill. That is, you deal with the principle of the bill, and that enables people who don't like it to make those arguments. So we would do the whole of Thursday, 7.5 hours on Thursday on that, and then we'd have another 7 hours on Friday to do the sort of more detailed scrutiny, possibly some amendments to the bill. And we would do that from 10 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday. So our proposal is to give lots of time for this bill. I mean, that's longer than a two-page
but
bill
you
would
do
normally
have. You, so forgive me for cutting you off, Baroness, but my understanding is here, and I think we're all aware that we have the possibility of Parliament being prorogued, i.e. suspended, effectively shut down from the 9th, absolutely. Well, I guess that's not certain, but I understand it's entirely possible. Now, it would be reasonable to assume the government do not want this bill to pass into law.
Correct.
What could stop it leaving your house, or stop it actually not getting into what's called ping pong, where you pass an amendment and it ends up going back and forth between the two of you, so it could almost be timed out unless you agree to
it? It would be timed out.
And wouldn't that be a really brilliant tactic of the government, who don't like this bill?
Well, you could say it's brilliant, but if it means that the government is abusing parliamentary procedures, it's already had an unnecessary 5-week prorogation, and that's why we need to do this urgently. Frankly, if they hadn't agreed to prorogue Parliament, we wouldn't even be trying to do it in a hurry. We'd have plenty of time. We could do it in our normal way. It's because they've put on a guillotine. They have said we're proroguing Parliament on Monday, that has effectively put the guillotine on. So they did the guillotine, and what we're saying is, right, if you've done a cut-off point on Monday, then we will put a cut-off point that we should finish it by late Friday, so that everything's been done properly.
Now, there was apparently and I use this word very cautiously because they'll have the finger on the button, but there was a little bit of a cock-up in the House of Commons tonight, I understand, because I understand an amendment attached to this bill, and I don't want to get too processy because I think it drives everyone away, but basically an amendment to this bill passed almost by accident. And this was the one that wanted to bring back Theresa May's withdrawal bill for another vote. Now, does this present you with a problem that this could be amended or not?
No.
So you're not worried about that at all?
No.
So all this speculation that this might have been a bit of a shot in the foot for the opposition?
No. The problem is not that. The problem is the government and its side are abusing parliamentary process.
Are they? Are they really? Yes. I mean, they're using parliamentary
We have been doing amendments, and some of these amendments basically are stupid. We've been doing them since 3:30. They're preparing to do it right through to breakfast time and tomorrow. You know, they are being defeated on every amendment by about 100 on one side and about 277 on the other side.
Presumably, this is the time thing. Sorry to interrupt. To make it clear for all of us, this is to try and use up the time.
Absolutely.
But
they've got no support for these amendments. And they're putting amendment after amendment, and every time you do an amendment, it takes another quarter of an hour, or more than that, it takes another half hour.
And you have to vote on it, don't you?
To vote on it. So it takes a quarter of an hour for them to, if you like, move the amendment, that means they speak to it and they explain it, and then another quarter of an hour to vote.
But why is it so...
So they put down 120 amendments.
But why is it so, you know, you've made that point. Why is it so really disrespectful to do it? Filibustering has been going on for ages. Wasn't it Eric Forth in the House of Commons was the master at it in the Commons? It's a parliamentary process.
It may be in the Commons. We don't do that in the Lords. We do have conventions here that when something has come from the elected House of Commons, we treat it with respect and we don't do that.
We did cover that.
We are a different
sort. No, you are. I appreciate that. And you are better behaved generally. Let's be fair to you. But this whole process, we have seen convention overturned by the Speaker going against the advice of the House clerk. Something extraordinary, really, which I think even your own Speaker and the Lords may have commented on. I may be wrong on that. So is it really unreasonable this government says, hang on, we're not going to lie down like the last Prime Minister did and just allow these things to happen? He's going to use everything he can, every weapon at his disposal.
I don't think filibustering in the House of Lords is a reasonable. They should win it by argument and by votes on the issue, not on filibustering and silly amendments that aren't correct amendments. This is not the right way to take decisions over such an important issue as Brexit. This is not the right thing. This is not the way that we in this country traditionally make our laws, and it is disrespectful to Parliament to treat something coming from the elected House in this way. It is a complete breach of our conventional way of doing
Baroness
things.
Baroness Hayter, I'm only drawing you to a close to bring you to the end. I will leave you with a little thought, if I may, that actually, whilst you argue and make a very strong case why it's disrespectful to Parliament, of course, the bigger issue is many still feel Parliament has been disrespectful to the people. But we very much appreciate you joining us. Thank you for your help in getting us through all the work you're doing. And may you eat lots of Quality Street, I hear, are doing the rounds to keep you all sugared up. Thank you again. Well, gentlemen, we're going to go to a break, and I promise to bring you into this afterwards, but I was very keen to set the tone of what is happening. Coming up after the break, I'm going to speak to the former Conservative MP, Stuart Jackson, who was also Chief of Staff to David Davis. Then I swiped his job when he moved on to better things. Remember, you can have your say on everything we're talking about, if you like, in the anything you really want to talk about in the events of the last 48 hours, not just what we're talking about. Call me on 0344 499 1000, or by tweeting me in the studio at Talk Radio or at Nick Dubois.
No nonsense discussion. It's Speech Radio, Jim. This is Talk Radio.
Well, I don't know about you two, but I just feel like I've had a lesson from a baroness in what goes on in the House of Lords. It took me back to school a little bit, but I found it very interesting. With me tonight, for as long as they can stand it, I've got Will Dry from Our Future, Our Choice, and John O'Connell, Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Alliance. John.
Yeah, I think it's a lesson for everyone at the moment. Nobody really knows what's going on in Parliament. They keep hearing lots of headlines about bizarre procedures.
To be fair, I'm not sure many of the MPs
know. No, I'm not sure they do. And lots of the Lords debating and trying to stop things tonight will be probably doing it for the first time themselves. But I think what we're seeing is a Parliament trying to block Brexit, essentially, and going against the vote of 17.4 million people. So it's not going to go down too well when all they see is lots of arcane procedure up on their TV screen.
I can see how you feel about that. But aren't you even a little grumpy today? Because it was a spending review. This is kind of your big highlight of the year at the Taxpayers Alliance, isn't it?
I know. We had champagne at the ready, but nobody else was there to celebrate. Right? It was one of the times of the year where we get to talk about a domestic agenda. It never really happened.
I promise you we will be returning to that, because now I belong to a party that is busy splashing the cash. I'm sure we'll have something to talk about. Will, thanks so much for coming. Our Future, Our Choice. You guys have made a real splash. You're the voice of young people. And I just want to say to you, first of all, at least you're honest. You make it clear you don't want to come out of the EU. You're not into all this. You're not into all this stuff we're seeing in Parliament where people say, no, we're not anti-Brexit. We're just anti-no deal. You know, you guys say it straight. So how's it going? Are you happy today, or is today not a good day? Tell me.
Well, I think today is, if you're on our side of the argument, and I agree with you, there's a broad set of people on our side of the argument. I think today's a good day. But I think you have to look why today has happened, and that is because we've got a Prime Minister who is trying to force no deal on our country and on our Parliament. I slightly disagree with John in this respect.
Very slightly.
I voted Leave, as I suspect you might have done. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. In 2016. But I don't think I voted for a no deal Brexit. I did not vote for queues at Dover, for shortages of medicine, for hundreds of thousands of people, many.
But you don't know you've got that yet, Will.
Well, I think every single, I mean, you were a Conservative. You're meant to be
I still am. I haven't been kicked out.
Yeah, one of a few. No, but you're the party of the economy, a party of business. Now, every single economic report that's analysed no deal in a kind of objective manner has said that there would be a hit to the economy in the event of no deal.
Yeah, and most from shortages. And
most mainstream ones say that hundreds of thousands of people would lose their jobs. So one in Northern Ireland said that 40,000 people in Northern Ireland alone would lose their job. Now, I did not vote personally for that in 2016. And I can't speak for other Leave voters, but the ones I've spoken to, I don't think vote for that. So I don't know where Boris Johnson, by the way, never argued for that either. Nobody mentioned a no deal in 2016. So I don't get where you get the mandate, the democratic mandate for a no deal.
Do you know why? I have a feeling we might return to this, Will, because I was very happy to let you set out your case there. And funny enough, I've got a few clips lined up later. We might play you those later, but gentlemen, and feel free to chip in at all, we have the great Stuart Jackson, former MP for Peterborough, Chief of Staff to David Davis when he was Secretary of State for exiting the union, and then I nicked his job. Stuart, welcome.
Good evening, Nick.
Very good of you to join us. Today, good day or bad day?
Well, I think it's an interesting day. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination it's all over. In terms of the bill, it still is in the Lords. There is every chance that it's going to be very closely fought and filibustered in the Lords. I have to say, I was chuckling Baroness Hayter in a slightly patronising way, explaining how democracy is a terrible thing in the Lords. I mean, these are people that actually, let's be honest, are breaking historical precedent today by seeking to put a guillotine motion to cut debate. And this is the whole point of the Lords, that it has ample time for proper scrutiny and oversight, which is different to the Commons, which is much more heavily whipped. And so what these Remain peers are saying is, because it's a bill we want to push through with the Remainiacs in the Commons, we are going to throw precedent and convention out the window and try and push this bill. And for those people who do care about democracy, who are also Brexiteers in the Lords, they're absolutely doing the right thing to use the system to try and say this is wrong. And obviously they're going to also scrutinise the bill when it eventually surfaces in the Lords in the next day or so.
And I think it's fair to say, isn't it, that the Commons has seen some extraordinary upheaval of convention against the advice of the clerks.
Well, I think Burko is beyond the pale. His position is completely unacceptable and untenable. The very unfortunate comments yesterday about Michael Gove's family and children, the way he has behaved in a completely unreasonable and disgraceful way over the last year. You know, he broke his word to leave last year and resign. He's clearly not impartial, and he's pulling down the... frankly, the reputation of Parliament every single day with his conduct.
I think it
can't come too quickly that Burko is gone. And actually, if the Conservatives are going to put a candidate up against him in Buckingham, good luck to them, because actually I think he's too cowardly to fight that election, and I think he knows he would lose. But I think we have to throw that convention out the window and contest that seat.
Stuart, I suppose this is going to come down to one thing today. We saw the first attempt to try and get a general election, because the Prime Minister is just totally, has no intention, as far as I can tell, of being put into the position of going back to Europe, effectively humiliating this country once again and asking for an extension. So he's going to move heaven and earth for that. But you're a seasoned campaigner, you're a seasoned parliamentarian. What options are left to him if this bill comes back from the Lords and goes into law that requires him to seek an extension?
Well, let's talk about what has happened today. This is the first time in history, I think, in modern political history, that a party that says, we've got a programme, we're ready for government, we're popular, everyone hates the Tories, everyone hates austerity, we demand a general election, but not just yet, because we might lose it. I mean, he is the original walking, talking, chlorinated chicken. I mean, this is the guy that, you know, knows full well for the 100 to 120 Labour Leave seats, Labour MPs, they are going to get badly beaten in a general election, because the Labour Party's position is nonsensical, it's incoherent, and I just think Labour are in a terrible mess. They've got the worst poll ratings after 9 years in opposition of any party in modern history. They've got the worst ratings for their leadership. They're all over the shop. Yesterday, Richard Bergen, one of their supposedly media-friendly spokesman, actually said, we're going to go to Europe as a Remain party, but we're going to abide by the referendum by saying that we want a referendum again on Leave or Remain, even though Remain.
Even I'm confused, Stuart.
I mean, he was confused saying it. I mean, he was challenged. The position, they're all over the shop. Keir Starmer, Emily Thornberry, John Mann. I mean, basically, the Labour Party are a shambles. And that's a bad thing, because the whole point of our system is that if a government is in trouble, then there should be a viable, coherent opposition ready to take power.
And
they're not even
ready
prepared
to
do that.
Seize the opportunity. Stuart, I know you're moving on. You're on to another programme later on. Will here from Our Future, Our Choice. Will, I think you're bursting to ask Stuart a question.
Well, not bursting, but I just wanted to ask you a question. I mean, you quite, you know, there's justified reasons to be opposed and scrutinised, the Lords today and the MPs, for tearing up convention. But I think we have to acknowledge what this happens on both sides. And I genuinely like to ask you a question. Can you give me an example when you have supported the upholding of convention when it has opposed your interests on Brexit?
Well, I've not done anything which has ripped up convention. I mean, we've
did you support Boris Johnson's prorogation?
Look, listen, people like you, and incidentally, you don't speak for young people. You don't speak for young people in Italy, in Greece, in Portugal, in Ireland, for instance, who've had to labour under 45%, for instance, in Spain, youth unemployment. They aren't for the European Union. They think the European Union stinks because it's visited penury and destitution on many of the young people in that country. So let's move on a bit. But we're told that there was a coup It's a funny sort of coup. There are no tanks. There's no junta. There's no colonels on the street.
And judging by today, it failed anyway. If it was a coup.
But nevertheless, the government has lost a vote, and its main plank is being blocked by Labour MPs and Remainers. That's a really weird kind of coup, and I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
No, I thought
you know,
a coup
is we are following proper constitutional propriety. What we're doing, Will, is following the instruction the people gave us 38 months ago to leave the European Union. And whether you voted leave or remain, I'm delighted you voted leave. People are getting angry. And actually, let me just say one more thing. If you obstruct the democratic vote of people, you give sustenance to the extremists. And that's what Macron has said. Mm-hmm. If you the rise of the Front National began when the French were forced to convert a referendum into a treaty, and they ignored the people of France. If you, as a parliament, and your supporters in parliament say, we heard what you said in the referendum, but we couldn't care less, and we're going to stay in the European Union, there will be very, very serious issues for politics and government in this country.
And we've got Will O'Connell here. John O'Connell, sorry, I've got a Will here as well, but we've got John O'Connell from Taxpayers Alliance, and just time for you to squeeze in a quick question to Stuart.
Yeah, a very quick one, Stuart. And you were talking about Labour, and they should be jumping at the chance of an election. They've been campaigning for one for some time. Is the fact that they're not taking that opportunity a sign that the power centre in that party has shifted towards people like Keir Starmer? Because he's the only one you ever see on the broadcast rounds now. You don't really see Jeremy Corbyn. What's happening with the Labour Party there? Why aren't they taking this opportunity?
Well, I'm an old cynic, and I look at someone like Jeremy Corbyn, who is not daft, despite what some people say. He's a factional, old-fashioned Marxist. He wants a general election because he thinks he could win it, bizarrely. He wants Brexit. He wants actually no deal, but he wants the Tories to be blamed for any fallout from that. But will he resist the temptation to go after his enemies on the right of the Labour Party? Because the Parliamentary Party is the only part of the Labour Party he can't control. If there's a snap election, he can dump all those people and put his candidates in. And I think that's too juicy a cookie in the cookie jar for Corbyn. Eventually, in the next few weeks, there will be a general election. Probably still there will be one on the 15th of October.
Yeah, my money's on that at the moment. Stuart, you're always very generous with your time to Talk Radio. That was Stuart Jackson joining us, former Tory MP for Peterborough and Chief of Staff to David Davis. He does know a thing or two about Brexit. I'm going to take a short break now. You're listening to Nick Dubois on Talk Radio. And really, I am asking, are you happy the opposition party have rejected a chance for a general election? Remember, they've been screaming for one for about the last two and a half years. Give me a call on 0344 499 1000 to have your say, or tweet me at Talk Radio or at Nick Dubois. Is he chicken? Is he chlorinated chicken, Mr. Corbyn? He certainly seems to be frit.
Feel the forthright fury.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
I guess, listening to Stuart there, we got talking a little bit about a possible general election, right? So we got the polls. The polls are good for the Conservatives in the sense they're in the lead, but it's not way out there. It would give, apparently, Boris Johnson a majority government, or some of them have been saying that. We're going to hear from an expert later who's going to put us all right on this. But actually, what is your sense about a general election? Do you think it will solve anything, John?
Who knows? I mean, if there is a general election in which the Conservative Party select candidates that believe in Brexit are red in tooth and claw, then it could solve something. That still means that the Conservative Party needs to return the majority, which is by no means a certainty. You know, they're in trouble in Scotland, perhaps. Mm. The SNP are polling very well right now. You could argue there's going to be a big Lib Dem resurgence when Remain voters switch to the Lib Dems from various parties.
Some say the South Coast is vulnerable. I mean,
South Coast,
about
the
these
South
like
West, suburban London seats as well. So, you know, there are all sorts of different things at play. And to what extent the Brexit Party plays a role in this, and whether the Conservative Party have some sort of deal or a pact with Nigel Farage, that remains to be seen. But it's by no means a done deal for Boris Johnson. But I do get the sense that people are tired of this. They want it done. And if an election is the way to make that happen, then that needs to happen fairly soon.
I mean, my fear is that it may not solve something because elections are very unpredictable. But Will, given your passion for wanting to remain, do you actually fear a general election given the polls at the moment?
No, I mean, look, when we started our campaign to try and get what we wanted was to have the British people to have a vote before Brexit was implemented on the terms that Brexit were implemented. And in some respect, I think John's right. If Boris Johnson goes to the British people arguing for a no deal Brexit, that is an imperfect, you know, because of elections fought in constituencies rather than national, mechanism of doing that. And I would absolutely welcome that. I also think the polls, you know, we all remember the 2017 general election. Theresa May was going to get this big landslide, 400 seats, ends up actually losing her majority. So you never know what's going to happen. But I would also say that Boris Johnson starts this election, if he calls one, or if Parliament grants him one.
Well, I think it's more, if Corbyn rises to the challenge, because the challenge is out.
But he starts it in not the best situation. The Tories have 13 seats in Scotland. I think most polls show them keeping just one of them. And bear in mind, that's not abnormal. They had around one seat before 2017. The Lib Dems, I think, are on schedule to take around 20 to 30, and that's around an average assessment.
Yeah, but overall, though, it's still showing a majority at the moment.
You're starting 12 seats down in Scotland. Mm. You're starting 20 seats down in England. By the way, he's just kicked out 20 Tory MPs. They're not going to disappear. They're all going to contest.
Well, actually, I can probably bring you a bit up to date on that, because actually, there's quite a few are quitting.
Not over half.
No. But I'm also personally slightly, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm personally slightly sceptical that the ban on re-standing will hold. I think the whip's gone, the whip will not be back. But if you look at history, John Major actually reinstated both the whip and selection in Maastricht days. So I'm not sure if that will happen or not.
If he restates the whip, though, that doesn't solve the fundamental parliamentary problem that he'll have, because these people are opposed to his central Brexit policy. I struggled to see him reinstating the whip because these people are fundamentally...
No, I didn't say the whip. I said the whip's I'm talking about in the event of general
election. I struggled to see him allowing the local associations or CCHQ to select these people because they fundamentally oppose his central policy during the general election. So he starts 20 Lib Dems down, potentially 10 further seats down in England, with 12 also gone in Scotland. That's not a great position when you need to be gaining seats to start 30, 40 down.
But actually, I think brutally, with an opposition party that's on about 22, 23 points after 9 years in opposition, he's pretty good position by comparison.
One quick thing. Theresa May's theory was that she could sweep up these Northern Labour seats very quickly after the election was called. The Labour vote, which wasn't quite there in the polls, recalibrated to those MPs in the Northern Labour areas. I think that would also happen in this election.
You're totally right that they are unpredictable. Elections are unpredictable. And I've got to say, politics is never going to be the same. You look at a seat and people will be making a judgment now, not just what the majority is, but how did that vote? Was that a Leave seat? Was that a Remain seat? That's going to go on. Do you, in your heart, John, welcome a general election that actually could this time be all about Brexit and not those key domestic issues, not least spending?
Well, I think that the pitch will have to be on both, because I think people are so fed up with Brexit for the very reason that there is a lack of a domestic agenda being discussed. It's entirely how the government framed today's spending review, you know, a sort of vision beyond Brexit. So I think that you can't go into it without talking about those issues. You know, it's exactly why people are exasperated. Why aren't we talking about hospitals, schools? Why aren't we talking about
prisons? I think the exasperation that's greater is, I want Brexit sorted. Mm-hmm. You see, I'm with you. I'm in your camp, you see. The noisier people are becoming, I think, is if you like, those perhaps on the fringes is the wrong, but the activists, the campaigners, they're getting very, very, very loud about it. And I get that, because we are finally hitting a deadline unless Parliament gets its way and we go into another 9 months of dithering and so forth. But the overwhelming sense I get is, my God, you lot are incompetent. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, everybody's
even young people will, surely. Young people must be saying, can we just get this sorted?
Everybody wants it done. That doesn't necessarily mean they want it done in the same way.
Yeah, but I'm putting a theory to you. Actually, there's going to be a huge shift to pragmatism because I think people are fed up with it. They want to get it done and then move on.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly, one example I'd give is that young people potentially want to focus on, you know, fixing climate change, building more houses, etc. But, you know, with regard to how does No Deal really solve this debate, unless you're of a view that for the next 20 or 30 or even 10 years, we should not have a trade deal with people who we do 45% of our trade with, then No Deal does not solve this debate because we are going to have to return to the exact same negotiating table that we just departed from.
You will certainly be negotiating.
And we will be negotiating from a worse position. A worse position from the one we currently have. Because there will be, you've done these negotiations, there will be total ill trust, total bad faith on both sides.
Actually, if you don't mind me saying so, we didn't really ever get to discussing the trade because we were still discussing the withdrawal agreement. But look, Will, this has moved on. You see, what is going on now? Even though whenever people meet around the table like we're doing now, they're talking about trade and they're talking about, we're not going to get the medicines in and we're talking about how great it's going to be. Actually, at the moment, this debate is about democracy. This debate is entirely about respecting the referendum, how the House of Commons is choosing not to do that, how we are seeing processes in place now that will leave a huge legacy of distaste, distress and anger with politicians if we do not deliver. That is deliver Brexit. That is why Boris Johnson has made it so key.
One thing I'm genuinely curious about is why is a general election, which both of you seem to kind of favour in some sense, No Deal being your optimal outcome, but general election being second.
No. Why is a general election? No Deal is not optimal outcome.
Why do you think a general election is not undemocratic, and I don't think anyone thinks a general election is undemocratic. Why is a general election so not undemocratic, but a referendum is the worst thing that could possibly happen in the world?
You are effectively going back and put two fingers up at people, aren't
but
you?
But why is
John?
The 2019 election not different to 2017 election?
We're talking about a referendum, okay? And a referendum...
One that's already happened, and the result of which has not been delivered 3 years hence, and people are annoyed. It's that fundamental, it's that straightforward. People are frustrated. I'm using very soft words here.
They're much stronger. They've got a finger over a button here. They can control it, I promise you.
Was a referendum. It happened 3 years later. That result has not.
Do you think
delivered.
They voted for No Deal?
I think they voted for Brexit. And it hasn't happened. I think it's that straightforward.
Do you think it's as straightforward as saying that any form of Brexit, no matter the cost, is better than asking the people with all that we know now and all of the trade-offs that we've learned about?
Are you saying nobody knew No Deal was a possibility?
Nobody mentioned the terms No Deal in the 2016 referendum.
Will, I'm going to have to put you right. Okay. Now, I would like you to just take for a moment yourself back to March 2016, when our then Prime Minister was out there saying the
following. You have 2 years to negotiate. At the end of those 2 years, you are out and you have to operate under World Trade Organization rules.
But don't just take his word for it, because his close ally, George Osborne, he had something to say about this.
There's relying on our existing membership of the World Trade Organization, where, like Russia or Brazil, you put nothing into the EU but get nothing out in terms of preferential access. That's the WTO model.
Now, this is all before the referendum, and I really would like to throw into the pot that former Conservative Chancellor, that former Conservative MP, Philip Hammond.
And at the end of that 2 years, there is no guarantee that agreement will have been reached, but our exit would be automatic.
Now, come on, Will. I agree, not everyone would have heard it, but the idea that we weren't discussing it.
I know I look very, very young, but believe it or not,
you were old enough to remember that.
Exactly. I was conscious during the time of a referendum. And I also remember the Leave campaign, who I kind of supported in some sense, but I voted for them.
You're not going to be a politician here and deviate, are you?
No, I'm not at all. But what I'm going to say is that the Leave campaign told me and told all of this country that everything you just said was a complete lie, was Project Fear, was completely wrong, and you should not at all vote based on what those guys said. Boris Johnson said time and time and time again throughout the referendum that there would be a free trade zone from Iceland to Turkey, that there would be no tariffs. Chris Grayling said that there would be no tariffs introduced in the event of Brexit. They all said this. They all said this. And now we're told that your vote, my vote, should be is a mandate to become the only country on earth, with the exception of perhaps North Korea, having no free trade deal with our closest neighbours. That is not democratic.
But you do agree we were discussing no deal before the election.
No, no. The Leave campaign did not campaign for anything
no
deal.
I love your passion. Do you need a cloth there? Because I felt something spilt as you were waving your arms very energetically around. And look, the point is that I do get very frustrated when we are constantly told we didn't know what we were knowing for. I did not do a checklist on everything you said, but I take your word for it entirely. But you have to accept, Will, the idea of turning around and saying we didn't know what we were voting for, we didn't know about no deal. The evidence also suggests we did. We had the chance and we said it. John, do you remember, let me give you a chance to be brutally honest here. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how the negotiation would be set out, that if we didn't come out with a deal, we would end up on WTO terms?
During the referendum campaign?
Yeah, or even before it.
No, I don't remember that at all.
So you didn't hear them talking about no deal?
I'm saying I don't remember it. Yeah, I'm not saying I didn't hear it.
So, but, fair enough. I think the point is, my point I'm going to make to you is, whether it's a general election, whether it's a referendum, actually, you know, there's a lot on offer. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. What I think people should be, those people who have this firm position that we never said anything, we never did it, even when confronted the evidence, they're not so sure about it. I think people need to take a deep breath and they ought to realise that actually a lot of things are said in referendums. Mm. A lot aren't even carried out in general elections. Mm. My God, I could go through a list of broken promises, Labour, Conservative, Liberal Democrats and student fees. But where does that get us? We're talking now about democracy and a vote that was a legitimate vote, and to turn your heels on that, turn your back on that and ask people to vote again in a referendum, no wonder there is outrage. Well, are you outraged out there? Because if so, we want to hear from you on 0344 499 1000. Tweet us on @TalkRadio. There's three of us here hungry to talk to you. Or you can just lecture us. Tell us what you think. Today, Parliament took a step in overthrowing the referendum. Parliament has made it clear it wants to stop Boris Johnson leaving on October the 31st. The Lords are meeting now, unelected representatives, to help push through the bill that could stop us leaving the EU on October the 31st. Do you think that's a good thing? Do you think that's a bad thing? Have your say by calling 0344 499 1000.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
This is Talk Radio.
You are listening to Nick Dubois here on Talk Radio with my guest for the evening, Will Dry from Our Future, Our Choice, and John O'Connell, Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Alliance. I'm asking the question tonight whether or not it was right for the opposition parties to reject the chance to have a general election. You can have your say on 0344 499 1000. Now, a couple of texts just come in. This one, I can't see who it's from, but it says Boris is showing leadership, has a clear policy position and is a proven campaigner. Unlike the opposition, he'll win an election and gain a significant majority, says Tim. Well, I know you'll buy that all the way. So, got a tweet here from Paul Barker. Ask Will what changed from him allegedly, so we'll see, voting leave in June 2016 to October 2017 when Our Future, Our Choice started up. I didn't think the negotiations, he said, started till 2017. So actually, Will, when did you, it's a good question, when did you change your mind?
I changed my mind, I think around mid-2017. And it's a question I get asked fairly often, as most people who do who have changed their mind either way. And I, to be honest, I don't have a very good answer. My only answer is...
You don't have to have any answer. You can tell us all to get lost, but I am interested.
I think it was just a general sense, a realisation that we were not heading to the kind of promised land that was mentioned in the referendum.
Yeah, OK, fair enough. I'm sure we'll get a question for you, John. We'll bring it in. But we've been talking about, is it a good idea to have a general election? We all talk about the polls, but truthfully, I think the three of us sitting around this table probably don't know what we're talking about when it comes to polling and what might or might not happen. So we have a man on the phone, a great man, Sir John Curtis, Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde. Sir John Curtis, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Nick.
Now, I don't know what I'm going to really not ask you. I could keep you here for about an hour. But we've seen Boris Johnson start his strategy to go for an election. I think it's not unreasonable to think that despite protestations, there's a large part of him who would like to be forced into election. He seems to, one could say, call the bluff of Jeremy Corbyn, who doesn't want an election. Can you make any sense of what's going on?
Yes. I think, first of all, I would disagree with your premise that Boris Johnson wants to be forced into an election. I think it's been fairly clear for some time that while holding an election after October the 31st, could well be in the Conservatives' interest, assuming Mr. Johnson has succeeded in extracting us from the European Union by then. At that point, the threat from the Brexit Party would disappear. In contrast, he's now having to say he wants to hold an election when he still has a significant policy difference between him and the Brexit Party, and when probably his chances of winning election will rest on his ability or otherwise to reduce the proportion of the Leave vote that's gone to the Brexit Party. You know, he's had success in that in recent weeks, it has to be said, but he needs more to be sure of winning an election. So that, I think, is where Mr. Johnson is at. He is, frankly, having to go for an election earlier than he would like and is probably ideal so far as chances of winning are concerned. On the Labour side, first point to make, there is no doubt the Labour Party is not in a fit state to fight a general election. It's at 25% in the opinion polls. But the advantage to the opposition of certainly denying him a election tonight is that, of course, there is still this bill going through that they want to get through to rule out a no-deal Brexit. Now, maybe or maybe not by the weekend it would have gone through, although the government is trying very hard in the House of Lords to filibuster the progress of the bill. But the real question then arises, what happens if on Monday, or maybe even Tuesday now, because Mr. Johnson's got himself another day by saying he wants the 15th of October, he goes back to the House of Commons and say, well, your bill's gone through, what do you want to do now? It's pretty clear that the Liberal Democrats think that the opposition should still block an election. It's clear that it's not clear what the SNP think. They're leaving their position open. And there is clearly a difference inside the Labour Party on this issue. So Keir Starmer seems to be minded to say, no, we'll still oppose an election. Jeremy Corbyn appears minded to go for it, and there's clearly disagreement amongst Labour MPs. Why might Labour want to hold back? Well, think about it. You've now got a situation where Boris Johnson will not be able to negotiate against the background where he knows, if necessary, he can deliver a no-deal Brexit, because that's no longer the automatic default. If he comes back from the European Union Council without a deal, the House of Commons will be able to say, we're not allowing you to get to go without a no deal. You've got to apply for an extension. So Mr. Johnson has potentially got around his neck something he doesn't want, and as he said, it undermines his negotiating strategy. But then, if indeed what the opposition wants to do is to ensure that no deal happens, then frankly they will not want to have an election until after the 31st of October, because if there is an election and Mr. Johnson does win, he will be able to go away and repeal this bill that the opposition have been getting through, and they don't achieve anything. So it seems to me, from the opposition's point of view, Mr. Johnson is in a corner. He has had his negotiating strategy undermined, and they have the ability to stop him from going to the country. They can make him use the 5 weeks of prorogation rather than just preparing for a Queen's speech, trying to explain to the electorate how he's trying to get a deal and how he's managing to get a deal, even though he can no longer assume he can come out on a no-deal basis. And leaving the Prime Minister in that difficult situation and perhaps eventually forcing him to eat his words and to make him go for an extension would strike me as more clever politics. If you want to undermine the government, if you want to make him vulnerable to attacks on Nigel Farage, then would be, well, you get the bill through, you then hold an election, you lose the election until you lose the bill anyway.
He doesn't seem to have given up entirely. There's a lot of talk about him bringing a notwithstanding motion forward,
yep.
notwithstanding to the Fixed Term Parliaments Act. In other yep. words, I want you to ignore the Fixed Term Parliament Act, yep. and we will have an election on October the 15th. That calls Labour and Liberals bluff a little bit, but it would drive into an election on the 15th.
Assuming that the bill can go through, because remember, less than half of all MPs voted in favour of Boris Johnson's motion tonight. What incentive do Kenneth Clark or Nicola Soames or Rory Stewart or Philip Hammond have for voting for an election? And it could well be the case that the opposition could actually defeat such a bill in the House of Commons. And certainly, if the House of Lords were willing to reject it, the opposition have a majority in the House of Lords, Mr. Johnson cannot necessarily get his bill through in very, very short of time.
It would be extraordinary, though, for an unelected chamber to reject effectively a request for an election from the elected chamber. So
but we do have a government that is currently trying to use the House of Lords to, in fact, to stop the will of the House of Commons being implemented by trying to filibuster
indeed.
The bill on no deal. So, you know, sauce for the goose, sauce for the gander.
Indeed, and I suppose in some senses they're also changing their own rules by trying to time limit what they're debating as well. Conventions are being thrown out, aren't they?
Absolutely, because we've got this deeply polarised debate, and because we're talking about a one-off decision, usually in the end, the parties kind of stick to the conventions and the understandings, because if you're in government now, you know that maybe in 5 years' time, you may be on the opposition benches. So that helps to discipline politicians to kind of be reasonable and fair with each other about how business is conducted and to keep to a certain set of rules. Because we have now got two sides that are very clearly determined to try to push Brexit in a very different direction, and this is a one-off decision, a lot of that discipline is being lost. You're absolutely right on both sides of the argument.
So, John, I've got John O'Connell with me from the Taxpayers Alliance. He's desperate to ask you a question.
John, I was just wondering, the notwithstanding motion, whether that bill itself would be amendable, and so Remainers in Parliament could then tag something else onto it to say, notwithstanding, only in the event of a no-deal Brexit.
The intention of it, in other words.
Yeah, sure. But, of course, in order to be able to get the amendment through, then they've got to have the majority votes for it. And if they've got the majority votes to scupper the bill entirely, one suspects that would be the rather more straightforward action for them to do. So, I mean, you know, remember, this is a deeply minority government, and whether or not we can get anything through the House of Commons now has to be a question, something we certainly cannot do.
You've made a really good point now. Boris Johnson, as you say, is in a deeply minority government, certainly on this issue, although I noticed, curiously, many of the non-whipped or the de-whipped Conservative MPs were still sitting on the government benches, which I thought was interesting. But essentially, why then, on this issue, is the Leader of the Opposition not going to call a confidence vote and try and form a government? What's stopping him doing that?
In the short run, he's not going to do it because that again precipitates election before his bill has gone through.
But would it if he could form a government and people?
Well, the answer is he couldn't. I mean, look, what we have got, that what's defeated the government today is an alliance that ranges from the SNP to the Labour Party, to the Liberal Democrats, and to a bunch of Conservative politicians who certainly do not want Jeremy Corbyn to be Prime Minister. They don't even necessarily want to stop Brexit. Many of them just simply say, we want to have a deal rather than to leave with no deal. So this is a very disparate coalition who can agree that they don't like no deal, but they certainly don't agree on what the government should be, unless, and perhaps, this is why we come back to the debate a few weeks ago as to whether or not Jeremy Corbyn,
but
Kenneth Clark might be put forward as to have a unity government. It would be a deep irony if Kenneth Clark, having been thrown out as a Tory MP, finally realises at the end of his career his dream of becoming Prime Minister, if only for a short while.
Albeit as an independent overseeing an extraordinary coalition. An image that doesn't sit comfortably with me, but Sir John, thank you so much indeed. That was Sir John Curtis, Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde. Do you know, what was going through my head here is, blimey, I've been in politics for a few years. I was an MP for 5 years, and I was struggling to keep up with Sir John as well. Can you imagine what the public make of this?
Well, even throughout that whole conversation, you might have had listeners who were thinking, what are these guys talking about?
So I hope we've got some listeners left. We'll make sense of it. We will make sense of it because coming up after the break, after the 11pm news, we've got Richard Graham. Now, he's the Conservative MP for Gloucester. He joins me on Talk Radio to discuss the events in Parliament today. But, you know, why not have your say on what we're discussing? Tweet me on at Talk Radio or call on 0344 499 1000. Remember, today is huge. They'll be writing about this in the history books. I'm not quite sure what they'll be writing about in the history books, but this is huge, an extraordinary situation. We are in great danger of Parliament stealing the referendum, which I think could cause quite a few problems.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
This is Nectar Bois taking you through the evening. Believe it or not, we're the only ones, we're not the only ones who are sitting here working. I mean, they call this working. I love it. But actually, the House of Lords, they are buried in lots of legislation. And I'm delighted to say personally that there are Conservatives in there trying to filibuster this rather unattractive bill that went up from the House today that basically wants to tie the hands of the Prime Minister so he cannot leave, should he have to leave with no deal, on the 31st of October. And it's nice to see a text in from John who says, so refreshing to have a voice on mainstream media. That's us, representing the 52%, besides Iron Mike, Mike Graham. The doesn't matter. A decision has been made, but this has now become a class warfare. Brexit must be implemented for the sake of stability and faith in democracy. Certainly those last two lines I have absolutely no issue with. And I quite unashamedly read that because I liked it. Now, we have Richard Graham, Conservative MP for Gloucester on the line, who's been busy tabling amendments today. Now, Richard, welcome.
Hi, Nick.
Now, look, Richard, I'm going to ask you this in all seriousness because I'm losing count. Are you still a Conservative MP?
Yes.
Good. Yes, I wasn't sure because it's been an extraordinary 24 hours. I never thought I would see it in my political lifetime. So I'm sure you're exhausted. Fabulous of you to join us today at 11 o'clock. Tell me, before we talk about your specific amendment, what was the mood like in the House of Commons today?
I think it fluctuated, Nick. I think it went up and down in different ways. Remember that Parliament's only been back for 2 days. It's a new government. It's effectively only been in place in parliamentary terms for 3 days. So everything is still quite new. A lot of people don't know who ministers are. A lot of colleagues are asking each other, what are you minister of or for? So it's a funny mixture of, if you like, a school that's just come back, a government that's facing a crisis, and a country that has still to resolve a major issue.
The Conservative Party has frankly, and I don't think you'll disagree with this, it's been through a traumatic 24 hours, 21 Conservative MPs who were effectively expelled from the party, some of them long-standing, two former chancellors, Nicholas Soames. Can you tell me, was there any anger in the chamber today, or was there just a bit of sorrow that it had come to this?
I think, Nick, the difficulty is that the Prime Minister made a great point of saying during the leadership elections that he wanted to unite the country. And what he's actually achieved so far in the first 48 hours of being Prime Minister in a sitting parliament is to divide his own party, lose a majority of one, and make enemies of a group of people who've been very loyal Conservatives all their life. And this from a Prime Minister who, of course, voted against his own government's bill on Brexit twice. So this is not a happy starting point, and there was a lot of tension in the 1922 committee meeting about this. The way I would put it is that, frankly, we need to be love-bombed rather than sort of scared. And it gave the opposition, of course, a lot of ammunition to criticize the government and sympathize with people who not that long ago would have been their political enemies, but now they are able to find as their newfound friends.
May I just put it to you, Richard, though, that on this instance, a very clear understanding, it was made very clear the day before, or the day before the day before, that effectively, by voting with the opposition on this so-called Rebel Alliance amendment, that you would be having Conservative MPs ceding power from a their own party, their own government, and handing power over to effectively an opposition. It was a huge thing to do. Is it not really surprising that after, frankly, 3 years of, shall we say, indecisive leadership, or what seemed like indecisive leadership a lot of the time, that this was a decisive, if not a very harsh move?
Well, I think there are 3 points there, really, aren't there? I mean, the first one is that people were being struck off for voting to support a motion for a debate on these issues. That was yesterday, on Tuesday. Not actually voting against the government on a bill. So that is the first point, which a lot of people find rather curious. Second point is, of course, all governments want their troops to be loyal. But when you've got a leader of the House who's voted against his own government 100 times...
But he didn't cede power to the opposition. I think that's the distinction I'm making.
You know, that's a difficult stance to take. And the third thing is, most importantly, is it working? Is it helping him in the division lobbies? And that's something that you and all listeners will have to make up their own minds on. But I would say that this Prime Minister during the hustings made a great point of saying that actually people would not rebel against his government, and that there'd be 40 or 50 Labour MPs who'd be voting with us. I haven't seen much signs of either of those things yet.
Well, now tell me, where are we going next? The Lords, there's an attempt to filibuster it. Where's your money? Will it come back from the Lords unamended?
I don't know. I think, you know, at this stage, an evening after a pretty long day, and my ability to think absolutely clearly on very...
Well, we're going to put you on the spot here.
is relatively modest. But I think the point really is this. The Prime Minister has called for a general election, and it's quite clear that Labour doesn't want to support it until this bill has got through. My instinct is that however long you filibuster for, that bill will go through sooner or later. And when that bill has gone through, Labour will then support a general election. I don't know what the implications on the timing of all this will be. The important thing is, really, for the people of the United Kingdom, is that are we any clearer to resolving the issue of Brexit? And in my mind, which was the point of my amendment, the most important thing is to be able to differentiate between two types of people who say they don't want no deal. The first type is people like me who prefer a deal because we think that's going to be in the better interests of the country. The second type is people who say they don't want no deal, but actually what they mean is they don't want any Brexit. They don't want to respect the referendum.
Sure.
And there is an important difference between the two, and I think that's why it is important that eventually we get a vote on a deal in order to smoke out effectively those who really do recognise we've got to leave, but prefer to do so with a deal.
Unfortunately, your amendment didn't succeed on the day. But the reality is, we've been talking about it here in the studio, and a sense of this has come in from text to us here. There is an overriding sense that a lot of people are now way beyond the arguments. They're fed up. They've heard it so many times. On the one side, oh, you're going to get shortages of this, and on the other side, everything in the garden's going to be very rosy. There is a sense that Boris Johnson actually caught the mood of many people, not just Brexiteers, who said this will be done by October the 31st, with or without a deal. Now, we all understand how emotive with or without a deal has been. Where we are now with this bill is we're just going to be in another 6 to 9 months of purgatory again, aren't we? Can you put up with that? Can the country put up with that?
Well, I didn't support this bill for precisely the reason that I think the difficulty with getting an extension and then trying to do things is that you risk carrying on the same problems that have happened for quite a long time, as you point out, which is we could go into an endless sort of circuit, and there are those who quite like that because they think eventually the government will sort of give up and there'll be a second referendum or revocation of Article 50 or something.
Or a general election that might settle it. Will it settle it, do you think?
Or a general election that might settle it. Well, I mean, my worry about a general election is that I think the new Prime Minister is has to roll the dice of his absolute commitment to October the 31st, whereas other candidates had a bit more nuance on the date. So he has to roll the dice again further. And there will be seats, conservative seats in the country, which will not face a happy time in the polls. And he's making a big gamble that he will be doing well in constituencies largely held by Labour, who voted to leave, who will support him. And you're right, Nick, you're quite right, that there's a lot of people in the country fed up. They want this thing resolved. And that's why most of us, you know, did not support shenanigans that could delay it longer.
Well, Richard, we're relying on you. Come on, we want to get back to other things. We want to look forward. You're now splashing the cash as a party on other key important domestic issues. Hopefully, we can get through this by October the 31st. Richard Graham, Conservative MP for Gloucester, thank you very much for joining us. There, are you reassured? Now, come on, Will, you must have quite liked him. He wasn't like saying, we are coming out without no deal on the 31st. But there was a voice of reason. I think he was saying, you know what, I think we're all weary of this. Mm. We've tried and we don't want another 9 months, Will, or whatever you guys are looking for with this bill today.
I want this resolved as quickly as you do.
Good.
I don't think that no
then
deal...
Then go back to being a Leaver and get behind Boris Johnson, Will. We can work on you this evening.
Maybe. I don't think no deal can resolve this, as I've already explained. I don't think if you crash out of no deal, you're going to spend the next 10 years...
Stop it. You're not allowed to say crash out. Going to wind you up with lots of other things.
If you're going to go out of the European Union with no deal, you're going to spend the next 5 years, 10 years negotiating a trade deal...
You see, here we go again. Here we go again. You see, this is the argument that's been had. This is about democracy. This is about democracy.
Well, no, you just said it was about getting it done. And then now you're not refuting the argument that it is going to take around 5 to 7 years to negotiate a trade deal.
No, not at all. It is about, I said it consistently.
Well, is it going to take 7 years to negotiate a trade deal?
The point I'm making to you is where we are now. I can't tell you how many years it will be. I don't know. There's a lot of answers to that question. And you don't know either. But the reality is, this is about democracy. Are we going to honour the wishes of a referendum? Or are we going to do what you guys want, which is have another referendum till the people get the decision that the EU wants them to have, and an awful lot of our own politicians. Come on, this is about democracy now. Let's back the people. Let's remember we can move on when this is settled, and we can move on honouring democracy. So let us know what you think. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or text us on @talkradio or @NickDubois. I'll even let you guys put your Twitter feed out there. Do you know it offhand? Do you want to say your Twitter feed? Come on.
I've got a private...
Well, the Taxpayers Alliance Twitter account is @the_TPA, which everyone should log on and follow immediately.
Fantastic. Okay, we'll be back after the break.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions. This is Talk Radio.
Well, you wouldn't have been surprised if you'd been listening to Sajid Javid, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, pretty new to his job with the new administration, who came along today just to confirm that we are about to spend quite a lot of money. Now, let's just set the scene before John O'Connell puts me right. John O'Connell is the chief executive of the Taxpayers Alliance, and alongside him is Will Dry from Our Future, Our Choice. And actually, Will, you know, I know it's not about Brexit, but it is your future and it's your cash that we are about to splash, because you guys are going to be paying for it. So the good news is, right, John, that the deficit is down from a peak of around 10% to, I think they said, 1.1% today, which I thought was quite remarkable, because I thought it was about 1.8. So, but it's down, basically, to more manageable levels, the deficit, not the debt.
Indeed so. I mean, George Osborne did say in 2010 that it would be gone in 5 years, but we're still here with it. But
that's my failure. I was there for 5 years.
There's been a lot of hard work to get it down, you know. You can't be all negative.
So, look, okay, that's the good news. Now, today, he splashed about 14 billion cash. Mm-hmm. How sensible was this?
It depends how you look at it. If you look at it politically, it's clearly on an election footing. The entire spending review, as I mentioned earlier, was framed entirely around spending more money, ending austerity, the fact that every single government department was given a cash increase.
Inflation-linked minimum,
cash increase, yeah.
And they're just going to waste it.
Well, this is the problem. When you promise spending increases by a certain percentage, what you do is you bake in waste and you bake in inefficiency into departments because there isn't an incentive to cut waste elsewhere.
You know, look, this happens in councils, and it wouldn't surprise me if it happened in government. But why is it in like February and March, suddenly you see loads of projects happening? Mm. And the reason is they're all going, oh my goodness, we've got to spend the money, otherwise we won't get it next year. I have no idea if that's been well spent or necessary to rip that road up and replace it. You know, it worries me a little bit, not police, not health, not education, but right across the board, we're just saying here, more cash.
I think that's right. I think the sort of headline messages that the government have wanted to people to take away over the last few weeks have been 20,000 more police, spending on prisons, schools, education, NHS and all the rest of it. But when you agree across the board budget increases in that way, you do tend to just, you know, insulate departments for making hard decisions, eradicating waste, putting the right incentives in place for staff to find and get rid of wasteful spending in their own departments. So I know they did it for every single department to say that austerity has ended.
We're going
to
come back to this because, you know what? Government spending should not be called government spending. It should be taxpayers' spending.
There's no such thing as government money, Nick.
Exactly.
It's only taxpayers' money.
Anyway, I'd like to have a chat with Benjamin. Benjamin from Hazelmere in Surrey. Now, tell me, is that anywhere near Philip Hammond's seat at all? Or have I got that completely wrong? Benjamin, hello.
Hello. I'm not sure.
A trick question, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm a 74-year-old man, and I'd just like to have a chat with the young man. What was his name? Billy?
Will.
William. So I just wanted to know why you think it's down for the young people to have all the say with this Brexit thing. I mean, I was speaking to Jill and Barbara down the pub the other night, and I just think we all want one big celebration before we kick the bucket. So I think we're going to make a rival campaign called Our Funeral, Our Choice, where we campaign for us to have all the say, and we're going to campaign for a no deal.
Okay. I've sussed you on this one, you know, I tell you. Do you know, you don't sound 74 at all.
You didn't sound
74. You sound remarkably almost the same age as Will here, don't
well,
you?
Well, thank you very much, but well, thank you very much.
That's all right. Now, this brilliant campaign, Our Funeral, Our Choice, do you know what? Actually, I'm not quite convinced that's a bit of a runner here, Benjamin, but I do appreciate the immense efforts you've come to make this call.
What I want to know is who funds you?
Who funds you?
Ah, come on, Benjamin, he asked first, you see, and then you can ask
that question.
We've
crowdfunded over 200,000.
We're really just a startup. It's really just floating an idea at the moment.
Well, seems like that idea has run out of steam, but that was Benjamin, and we never did find out who was funding him. Okay, really good. Now I'm just flicking through the diary and seeing who was going to put up for that call. But there you go. It just shows, you see, there are people out there with Our Funeral. What was it? Our Funeral?
Our Funeral, Our Choice.
Our Funeral, Our Choice. I'm trying to see how that would work. Will, I want you, by the third hour, to come up with a campaign to push that one. Okay, there is the creative challenge. Let's get back to more reasonable things like the government want to spend our cash. You, in the meantime, are listening to Nick Dubois on Talk Radio, and I'm joined here by the great Will Dry from Our Future, Our Choice, and, of course, John O'Connell, the Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Alliance, who are very, very, very keenly watching how government spend your money. Look, you issued a statement today. I'm sure you wrote it yourself, but you seem to be implying that there's a little bit of a hint of an election in the air, so this is why we're splashing the cash. Now, Come on, that's an easy hit, isn't it? In fairness, they've been trailing this for quite a while. That they ever since the leadership campaign, Boris wanted to spend on police.
Yeah.
Boris was, you know, he was spending commitments quite a lot.
Yeah.
You know, is it really that cynical?
Yes, in a sense. But also, to be fair, what it does link back to is a lot of the Vote Leave messaging, actually, spending on priorities like NHS and things like that. So there seems to be an attempt to build a coherent strategy right through from 2016 on that kind of public spending. What they're also trying to do is shift onto a more domestic agenda, which I think a lot of listeners, a lot of people out in the country would probably, you know, crying out for, quite frankly. They can see the state of their public services. They can see what's going on in prisons. They can see what's going on in terms of crime on the streets. So this kind of positive talk about other things is very good.
But it's getting drowned out, isn't it? I mean, it's the story of this government at the moment. It's just
The last couple of days it's been drowned out. I'm not so sure over the last couple of weeks, actually. Okay. I think it did start to land quite earlier on. I think since Parliament has returned, there's been only one game in town, right?
So the coup, silencing Parliament, was actually quite a good strategy. We could have talked about other things.
Well, I agree with John that Boris Johnson has done a far better job at projecting his domestic priorities than Theresa May ever did. Everyone knows Boris Johnson's domestic priorities because essentially they're election slogans. Tackling violent crime, putting money into the NHS and levelling up schools.
You said that very well. You see, you made
I do a lot
fan,
of opposition research.
It was very good.
But exactly. I mean, you know, that has cut through. I'm very much in the bubble, but I think that has cut through far more than anything Theresa May ever tried.
Can I try and put Brexit out of your mind for a second, if I were you, if you could for a moment, because you see, we talk about levelling up spending on education and all this fancy language that goes out there. Do you think, you know, if you were down the pub or the club or wherever it may be, that we are ever going to see a Conservative government, despite how much it spends, getting people saying, you know what, those Tories are all right. They pump more money into the NHS and there's a bit more going into education. There are some people, and what's behind my question, is there some people who say, you know, you can't outspend the left. Okay, and we are actually, we're spending, the Conservatives, frankly, are spending an awful lot on these things now. Okay, there's been the austerity, I park that. I'm not trying to gloss over that. Your generation, do they actually, first of all, take notice of how much government is spending? And do you think, though, it's too ingrained? Tories cut. You've grown up nine years. I don't know, half your life to two-thirds of Tory cuts. Will we ever be able to move that?
That's really interesting. I definitely don't think people are paying as much attention to the government spending as perhaps John does. But, you know, it's not everyone's full-time job. I do think that the general the general trend of what a government is doing, whether it be austerity or putting money into public services, does cut through to the general public. And I do definitely think for my generation, cutting services is kind of synonymous with kind of David Cameron and George Osborne, as Theresa May and Boris Johnson have become synonymous with Brexit. And I don't think either of those two issues are a great brand for young people who tend to be against austerity and against Brexit. And that's a long-term challenge, I think, for the Conservative Party.
The only caution I would make is that Jeremy Corbyn, who was seen as the messiah in 2017, has lost a huge swathe of support with young people.
Because of his stance on Brexit, it's been a bit ambiguous for too many young people.
Oh, come on, you've been far too polite.
Quite ambiguous.
One important thing to remember is that in 2015, the Conservatives won a majority on a message of responsible spending, spending reductions in some areas. So talking about fiscal responsibility can actually appeal to voters when it's done in the right way. And
you see, I remember austerity message was actually pretty well received.
Yeah,
people
for
thought,
a while.
We're in a right mess. We've got to cut back. It wasn't entirely. There was a lot of obfuscation of what debt and deficit is and all of that. But actually, most people were going, yeah, you can't spend more. You used to tell people what we were spending more in interest than we were on education and things like that. And people, I guess. But eventually it bit.
Yeah.
Now, I just wonder, and this is why I'm not so sure it's all about a general election. I think you started the message austerity is over, but I'm not sure one increase in spending is enough. That's my point. You have to build over time and prove that you're committed to a certain sustainable level.
I think
and that means higher taxes at some point or more borrowing.
Certainly. I think, though, that you can talk about spending priorities, right? I mean, if people feel that the public services that they use at the sharp end are not as good as they used to be or, you know, not as in good quality as they used to be, then certainly spending some money on that could work. And then you could talk about some other things like where you could save money still, such as the structure of government. quangos, wasteful spending at councils.
I could start giving you some really good examples, but I'm not going to do that. You're listening to Nick Dubois on Talk Radio. Give me a call. Give us all a call on 0344 499 1000. Have your say on this historic day. And we are going to be discussing that, funny enough, again later.
No nonsense discussion.
It's Speech Radio, Jim.
This is Talk Radio.
Well, it strikes me as we approach 11:30 that the day is nearly over, and at the end of this day we have seen Parliament basically do its damnedest to sabotage Brexit. It has done it with a coalition of MPs, and as a result of that, the Prime Minister said, OK, we're going to have an election. If this bill becomes law, we are going to have an election. It was passed the House of Commons, and I want to take the choice to the people. And then the Labour Party decided to abstain. I mean, I thought the job of the opposition was to prepare and be fit for government and to take your chances. Now, it seems that isn't their current thinking. Personally, I think whether they're chlorinated or not, I think they are chicken. The main thing, though, that we should never lose sight of today is that there has been a parliamentary attempt to overturn a democratic vote. And I don't care it was 3 years ago. The fact of the matter is it's disgraceful that 38 months since the election, that Parliament is doing its damnedest to actually end the moment we saw some certainty that the 31st of October we would be out of the EU, deal or no deal. But that is my view. And I'd like to talk to a man who whose view I think is well known by many, but not enough. We need to hear it more. Not necessarily that I'll agree with it all the time. Brendan Chilton, General Secretary of Labour Leave. Brendan, very good to have you on the show again.
Good evening to you.
Now, I had a bit of a rant then, because I am cross, because I used to work in that place in Parliament, and I think it's not covering itself in glory. I'm pretty cross today. But tell me, you know, you're General Secretary of Labour Leave. Where do you stand? Probably more sensibly than me.
I think there's an assortment of things and factors that we need to consider in all of this. First of all, if I could just comment on Labour's position, I think ruling out leaving with no deal is absolutely incomprehensible. No trade unionist would go into a negotiation with an employer saying, regardless of the conditions you impose, regardless of the pay you offer me, regardless of the changes you make to my contract, I'm not going to strike. You always have to have, in any negotiation, the nuclear option. Now, while, of course, it's not preferable, it is essential to have it as a tool. And so I think this is a silly position Labour's adopted. And indeed, if we were in government, would the Labour Party be prepared to say, OK, no state aid, OK, unfair immigration rules, but we're not going to walk away? It's absurd. And there is an element of political point playing here. Now, turning to the government, I, unlike many Brexiteers, do not completely trust Boris Johnson to deliver, do or die, as he said, on a no deal if we have to get to that position, because we can only go on what he said in the public domain. And in recent days, there's been a number of statements to the effect of, if we sort out the Northern Ireland backstop, we can get a deal. But the withdrawal agreement is not just the backstop. There are an assortment of problems with that deal that are unacceptable, not just to Brexiteers, but also to Remainers.
So, Brendan, just to ask you to clarify, are you saying that you think, like some are suggesting, he really wants to bring back the withdrawal agreement minus or with alternative arrangements for the backstop?
I am indeed, yes, because let's remember, if we go through his record, and I'm trying to look at this not from a party point of view, but from a democratic point of view and someone who voted Leave. We have to remember he was indeed the Foreign Secretary when this bill was created, back in, seems ages ago now, a few years ago. He did vote for the deal when push came to shove, and his public statements and spokespersons from Number 10 have said that if we deal with the backstop, we can get a deal. We also have seen in the past few days that freedom of movement is not necessarily going to end when we thought it would end.
Yeah, but I did think it was a bit daft the way that was brought in. But the particular measure you're talking about, I think it, to be honest, I don't think you were able to deliver the promise. I think the promise was not unreasonable, but you weren't able to deliver it, which is why I'm not surprised there's been a bit of rowing back. But I detract.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to be cautious, and I say to some fellow Brexiteers who are terribly enthusiastic about this government, they're perfectly within their rights to do so, they've got to be cautious. This is a man who, and I, again, many Tories who I know on the Brexit side have said to me, he's our best hope. It's not actually a ringing endorsement.
But do you think that's a bit of cynicism with politicians, though? I mean, let's face it, we had no deal better than a bad deal, and we had that for about 18 months. That disappeared. So I can understand a bit of weariness in even the most ardent of supporters.
Oh, no, I totally get the point. I mean, we've had red, white and blue Brexit, we've had global Britain, we've had the lot, and I think, you know, it all means absolutely nothing. I myself have calmed down, despite everything, in the past few months. And something Caroline Flint said in the debate this evening, I thought very much hit the nerve. You've got now two very extreme camps. You've got those that want to completely overturn the referendum and go back in. And you've got those that, as Rory Stewart said, believe in the bin. Nothing's going to go wrong if we leave with no deal. Now, I'm in the middle. I'm happy to leave with no deal if we have to, but I accept there probably is going to be quite a bit of disruption for a period until we come to resolving our future relationship. And I think, actually, that's where most people are.
Indeed.
So these two extremes, I think, are actually doing the most damage because they're not representative of the vast majority of Leavers and the vast majority of Remainers.
I
think what's got to happen now, we are where we are, Parliament's done what it has done, and so it's now the country are saying, OK, Parliament, you have, to coin a phrase, taken control from the government, we're now watching you. And if you bugger this up, sorry, forgive my language, if you mess this up, you're out. And I think the country's now at that point. They've seen what's gone on in the past few weeks. They've seen what's gone on in the debates over the past few years where MPs have sought to overturn the result. Parliament now has got control of the situation. And so the responsibility is on Parliament to secure a proper Brexit. And if they don't, when the election comes, whenever it is, I think we will see one monumental change on all sides of the chamber.
How would you feel if Boris Johnson, and I can't predict quite how he could do this, but how would you feel if this vote did come back from the House of Lords, but he then tried to override it with another vote or used whatever legitimate means he could to bring the election on? Do you think that may lead to resolution, however uncomfortable it may be for Labour Party, which the polls suggest it might be? Would you feel that actually a general election might bring some resolution to it?
Despite the current position in the polls, I think it's worth pointing out that the post-election bounce that Boris received was nowhere near as large as that which Theresa May had. And as you know, when elections are called, they are seldom the issue that the election is called on is seldom the issue it concludes on. They have a way of changing as time goes on, as we saw in 2017.
Yep.
So I don't necessarily believe that a general election would bring resolution, and I think we'll probably end up in a situation where the House is pretty much spread on the same numbers as they are now.
But isn't forcing through the 31st of October, come what may? I mean, his determination to do that is perfectly legitimate, I think. I'm just worried he won't be able to.
I believe, you know, ultimately, if push comes to shove, we do need to leave with no deal on the 31st of October. But at the same time, as much as I appall what has gone on in Parliament, it is our system. And what's gone on is perfectly constitutional. Might not be proper, might not be fair, but it's perfectly constitutional. And if we don't like that, we have to change the way our system operates. So now I think whether election comes or not, we're looking at Parliament. And Parliament now has got to deliver on the will of the people. And if it doesn't, they're in trouble.
Brendan, I know Will here, Will Drive from Our Future, Our Choice. If I said youngsters campaign, you'd probably tell me off. People's campaign. Well, I know he'd like to ask you something, Brendan. Will.
Well, I think one... one point to make, Brendan, is that sadly in some respect, public opinion has not migrated to a compromise position, but as we all know, has kind of actually been split and has been driven towards, you know, Remain, revoke on one side, and no deal, Brexit at any cost on the other side. And both in Parliament and in the country, there's not a huge appetite to compromise. And what that's actually been beginning to reflect itself in the party system. The Conservative Party is now very much embracing no deal, and the Labour Party is very much embracing a referendum, and I think Cummins Conference will also embrace Remain. So my question for you is, as General Secretary of Labour Leave, is when Labour takes that position, you know, will you be able to vote for your local Labour MP if they're signed up to a manifesto that endorses a referendum, and also in that referendum campaigning to Remain?
Thank you very much for your question. First of all, good evening to you as well. It is an incredibly difficult position. When the issue of we're going to be fighting the election on is so profound, and I am a long-standing member of the Labour Party, and it's not just me. There are 5 million Labour voters in the country that are Labour voters. There are many Labour MPs privately and publicly that share my view as well, that leaving would be the preferable option. Indeed, I think there are some in the leader's office that might even share that view too. But we are Democrats in the sense that if you're a party member, you subscribe to the values, aims and rules of that party and have to adhere to what it says. Now, I will completely disagree with that policy, and even during the election, we'll point out that what we're saying in our manifesto is incompatible with our other stance, namely to Remain. And I have consistently warned that if the Labour Party goes down this route, we're going to suffer a big defeat at the election. And I think you're right, the conference will probably vote to become a full-blown Remain party this year in Brighton, and we will face electoral consequences of it. Now, I will always vote Labour. As much as I have many friends in the Tory party, I don't think I could quite bring myself to vote for the Conservatives.
Oh, I'll keep working on you.
But it's a very sad situation indeed when on all sides you've got people who voted Leave and Remain who are completely at odds with the party they support. And on this issue I virtually agree with everything else the party does.
Actually, Brenda, you might be interested just to see this tweet that came in, which I think goes to what you're saying. My MP, it's from Phil Thomas. My MP is Dr. Sarah Wollaston, who I voted for under a Conservative mandate. Then goes on to say, great to hear that you're talking about democracy and the 17.4 million people who voted to leave. We did not vote for a deal. Our constituency voted out. And now our MP has joined the Lib Dems. Horrendous. Because you've actually gone from someone who was on a manifesto who said, you know, we're going to leave the EU, to a party that says, we want to remain. And that's your representative. And I think democracy suffers a little bit here. I've also got John O'Connell from the Chief Executive Taxpayers Alliance here, who I think he's keen to join the conversation with you, Brendan.
Cheers. Evening, Brendan. A very quick question on the Brexit Party. And if the election happens after the 31st of October and we've left, you feel very much that the Brexit Party's fox has been shot. How does that impact Labour on that election if it happens post 31st of October?
If I may, I don't necessarily think their fox has been completely shot. We have seen in the past with its former guys, UKIP and now the Brexit Party, they seem to rise then fall, then rise then fall. My view is that Brexit will probably not be secured by the 31st of October. And so if there is a general election, I think they could do reasonably well. Whether they get seats or not, I don't know. I think for them it would be a folly if they're it seems to me their primary target is Labour seats and Labour voters. It seems to me a folly, therefore, for them to sort of enter into any form of pact with the Conservatives, because despite the fact there are a significant number of Labour voters who supported Leave, there is a real tribal nature to the Labour vote, perhaps more so than any other party. And Labour voters fear a Conservative government more than they desire Brexit. I personally am the other way. I'd much rather have Brexit under a Tory government than Brexit.
Well, Brendan, I'm very sorry to hear that, because I'm going to have to end talking to you on a slightly a downer there. I've been kind of gently smiling to myself listening to you, and now you've gone and ruined it all. But Brendan Chilton, General Secretary of Labour Leave, thank you very much for that. Always a very good insight into perhaps how Labour Leave voters are thinking, something easy to overlook. Coming up a little later, I'm going to be speaking to Henry Hill of Conservative Home. And I suppose what I'll be really asking him, has it been a bad day? Has it been a bad 2 days? In the view of the Conservatives, I'm Nick Dubois, and you are listening to Talk Radio.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
According to the Times today, and according to an article I read on the excellent blog Conservative Home, which I thoroughly recommend, they're saying that it's been a bit of a seismic change with the Conservative Party. Obviously, it's obvious that we've lost something like 21 MPs, have lost the whip. Many will be not able to re-stand as candidates in the next general election should they do so. And it has raised some questions, both about the tactics, but also, as Conservative Home pointed to, it was talking about, has this changed the Conservative Party? Is it no longer a broad church? And actually, it's also not unreasonably pointing out that you may have a united party on this one issue at a time when that one issue is very important. But to join me and shed more light on whether the Conservatives have had a good day or a bad day is Henry Hill, the assistant editor of Conservative Home. Henry, welcome and thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Good evening.
And now, I think I was referring to Mark Wallace's article that I managed to get the glance through earlier. But can you tell us, has this been a bad day for the Conservatives or a good day for the Conservatives?
Well, I think certainly in terms of the House of Commons, it hasn't been a good day for the Conservative Party. The government has gone for an election, which is the most obvious way of breaking the deadlock, and failed. There does appear to be a ray of light in that, against expectations, it looks as if the filibuster in the House of Lords might actually be a success, which is, for those of us who are into that kind of thing, proving a very entertaining follow-along.
Well, no, Henry, that's good to hear that, because we had the Labour deputy leader and spokeswoman for Brexit from the upper house. I've forgotten her name, how terrible of me. But she was sounding very confident that they would the filibuster wouldn't work. So
how long ago was that?
About 2 hours ago.
Okay, well, obviously, you know, it's impossible to tell this far out. It depends on an awful lot of factors, but there is some quite sort of bullish stuff coming out of the Conservative camp a little while ago. So that remains to be seen. Certainly in terms of the expulsion of the MPs, it's a challenging decision. And I don't think it's one the Prime Minister would have taken lightly, but I think that if we do end up with a general election, it wouldn't make any sense if the general election were being fought on Brexit to have 20-plus Conservative MPs on the ticket who weren't prepared to vote for that policy. And if we look historically to before the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, really what Boris Johnson has done is exactly what John Major did to the famous Whitless Eight when they voted against him over the European Community Bill back in 1994. So there are historical precedents for what's gone on.
Do you think there was some speculation when I was drifting around the corridors of power, or lack of power as they were today, talking to members, there were some people who were actually saying or implying that they felt this was a bit heavy-handed what happened. To me, my response was, well, look, we drifted without leadership for about 2.5 years, or the firm hand of leadership. We had collective responsibility collapse with the cabinet doing their own thing, that it seems a bit rich now to complain when people who voted to take power from their own party and government and hand it to someone else then get treated as they have been. So, am I out of touch, or is this generally thought of as a reasonable thing to have done, even if it's harsh, I suppose?
Well, I mean, it's early days yet to determine where the balance of opinion lies in the country. I mean, I take a slightly different position from my editor on this. I think that actually, given the challenges posed by the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, that the government can no longer make individual policy votes into votes of confidence, I think that this is basically the next best thing, and I think that it's completely legitimate for the government to use that on what is effectively the central plank of its policy agenda. I'm the constitutional specialist for Conservative Home, and I also think that the entire idea of trapping a government in office, effectively refusing an election and then trying to force it to implement a policy that is entirely contrary to its position, is democratically absurd and dangerous. So I think that the government is well within its rights to resist this bill, using every means at its disposal, and challenge the Commons, including the rebels, to either vote for a general election, in which case we can allow the public to try and resolve this issue, or to give the government back control of the agenda and try and no-confidence it.
Where does it go from the fact that the general election, the abstentions from the Labour Party on the vote, they showed their chlorinated chicken, as has been pointed out. Where does it go next? There's talk of bringing a one-liner amendment to the Fixed Term Parliament Act and trying to get that through. With the expulsions, is that even feasible, do you think?
Well, the advantage of bringing a one-line amendment or a bill through is that it removes the need to get through two-thirds of the entire House. So not only do you need, it's not even that you need 50% plus one. You don't need a majority of the House. You need a plurality of the votes. So what Labour did today was Labour abstained, which meant that they avoided the optics of actively voting against the general election. Now, if there was a one-line amendment, they wouldn't have that option, and they would have to actively vote against the general election. And they appear reluctant to do that. There is the question, of course, of do they have a majority? Could the government end up getting defeated? I think they could. I think in the event that the government does end up getting defeated on a general election and this Lord's filibuster fails, which it might, then we are in genuinely unprecedented constitutional territory.
I can't work it out. I certainly wouldn't rush to put a bet on any outcome. Henry, I've got John O'Connell here from Taxpayers Alliance. I know he'd like to have a word.
Sure. Evening, Henry. Just a quick sort of big picture question about the Conservative Party more generally. Is what's happening at the minute, was it something that was coming down the road anyway? Was this split always there within the Conservative Party and now it's come to a head and we're going to see a slight realignment, or is that calling things too soon?
It could be too soon. I think that definitely the Conservative Party's divisions on Europe, they've been building up for a while and they've gone back 20 years, and I think some kind of reckoning was coming. But, you know, I looked at it today in a piece for CapEx, and I think that the problem that you've got is that there's really nowhere currently for an awful lot of those who've been expelled from the Tory Party to go. You know, a couple of them have found homes in the Liberal Democrats. But a lot of them aren't Liberal Democrats. Nick Bowles famously refused to join the Liberal Democrats.
But he was giving election advice today to Jeremy Corbyn, I thought, which was a bit bizarre.
Well, yes, they are all colluding on the subject of an election. But I still think, you know, obviously you can't really imagine any of the any of these Tory MPs joining a Labour Party led by Jeremy Corbyn, for example. So I think there really isn't all that much political space for them to go. So I think that the precedent really is, if you look, you know, John Major gave the Maastricht rebels the whip back after he'd won on Maastricht. And I think that if the Prime Minister can get Brexit delivered, then almost certainly the rebels will get the whip back because the issue will have been resolved. I think the only way that these rebels end up being permanently out, if you like, is if we end up having to fight a general election on the subject of Brexit, in which case CCHQ and the Prime Minister will really have no choice but to run new candidates in those seats.
Henry, wonderful as ever. Clarity. You actually brought clarity to a point. I was picking up vibes of, oh, well, maybe they will get the whip back. And I couldn't quite get my head around it. We discussed it here earlier. But yes, of course, the circumstances you outlined of if Boris Johnson is successful, gets us out on the 31st of October, anything is entirely possible. Henry Hill, thank you. Assistant editor of Conservative Home, which actually I remember I used to read as a candidate, because I found it far more preferable to reading the official briefings that came out from the Conservative Party. You see, now, this you are definitely too young for, Will, is Peter Mandelson, the sort of the master of the dark arts of the Labour Party. He introduced Message of the Day. Believe it or not, we never really had it before then. And he was sending out beepers to everyone telling them what to do. And we eventually got from the Conservative office Message of the Day. And this was about 1998-99. Message of the Day is meant to be concise, crisp, you know, what was the great tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime today. What we get from the Conservative Research Office at the time was about five pages of succinct messaging.
On Europe.
Yep. Well, no, funny enough, not a lot on Europe then, because no one was really interested in what we had to say at that time. Make any sense to you what Henry was saying, Will?
Well, I think Henry had a lot of sense to say, particularly on the constitutional stuff. I do think he slightly underplayed how fundamental a shift this could be in the Conservative Party. I mean, in my view, they've kicked out anyone who is a moderate and also has backbone has been kicked out. Now, there's some moderates, like Matt Hancock and Amber Rudd, who don't have backbone, so they've stayed. But anyone who's a moderate and does have backbone has had to leave and has been forced to leave. Now, I think that is a fundamental shift in the nature of the Conservative Party. And actually, I think Henry will be surprised at the political space that opens up for these people, because they're not just MPs isolated. There's 5 million people who voted Remain in 2016 and then Conservative in 2017 when they were advocating a Brexit deal, but they voted Remain before that. Where are these people going to go? They're not going to go necessarily to Boris Johnson if he's advocating no deal in a general election. If those guys are pallying up potentially
just,
with the Liberal
just
Democrats...
Just to be clear, I know it's easy to say it's about advocating no deal. Mm. He's not advocating no deal. He is clear as mustard, as I am. It's my view. It's probably the view of an awful lot of people, most people, that no, we would prefer a deal. But the alternative, for the first time ever, has been... Mm. If it comes to it, it'll be no deal. And I think this is an important distinction. But let me pick up on your central point, which when you pick off the key characters that you've done and you've talked about, I can see why you could perhaps start to think that the party is narrowing in its appeal. But I think two things to watch for. One to look at and one to watch for is that it's also emerging pretty clearly from number 10 that if we end up with the ERG not accepting a deal should it arrive, and that deal arrives without the backstop, and they say that ain't good enough, then I think you might see some expulsions then. So, thank you. You're listening to Nick Dubois on Talk Radio. I am with John O'Connell from Chief Executive of Taxpayers Alliance, but we say goodbye to Will Dry from Our Future, Our Choice. It's been great, Will. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
Indeed.
It's my bedtime.
And sleep well.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
This is Nick Dubois, and I'm now only... I say that. That's a bit harsh, isn't it? I'm with John O'Connell, Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Alliance. Will Drive from Our Future, Our Choice. Well, you know, it was his words. He said he had to go to bed. So I will say no more than that. It was lovely to have him. He's a great guest. And it helped make a healthy contrast to some of the views that we were expressing and others were. Well, has it been a rubbish day for Boris Johnson? Has it been a rubbish day for the Conservatives? Or where are we going to go next? It's anyone's guess in some senses, because we could be heading into new territory, depending on what happens in the Lords. Now, we heard from Henry Hill. There's some hope this filibuster might work, which will be quite interesting. But we're at a stage where basically Parliament is doing its damnedest to overturn a referendum result, overturn, taken power from the government to stop Boris Johnson trying to leave on the 31st of October with or without a deal. What next from this place? Even I'm beginning, as a great fan of the Parliament, even I'm beginning to have a sense of frustration that perhaps I shouldn't. But to help us through and understand what is going on is Tom Hamilton, reporter at Guido Fawkes. Tom, hello.
Hello. I am Tom Hamilton, but that is not absolutely not my job. I don't know quite what your researcher said I was doing. I'm a former Labour Party advisor.
Do you know, I was just looking you up on Twitter, and you're T.H. Hamilton, aren't you?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And I said, no, it can't be him who's coming on. But I bet you've never been introduced as a reporter at Guido Fawkes, have you?
Well, there's a first time for everything. Maybe that's the next job.
That's all right. I was often mistaken for a Labour candidate at general elections.
if that had been more successful, if more people had thought that, you might have won last time. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Anyway, Tom, fantastic to have you. In fact, I'm really pleased because I'm looking down the list of the guests, and I thought, right, you tell us today. If I'm a Conservative, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, for once, we were getting some clarity on Brexit. We had a date. We didn't seem to be having this endless drift that we'd been having. It seemed we could do it without having to really worry too much about what the Labour Party may or may not do. Then, bam! Suddenly everyone's lost their nerve on no deal, and 20 people defect from the Conservative Party. This strange alliance has been formed to wrest control from the government, and we're now at this, as far, frankly, as I'm concerned, this ridiculous situation where we've got a parliament about to direct a prime minister to do something that he doesn't want to do, and he said, come on, let's go to the people, and then the Labour Party said, well, actually, we don't want to do that. What's going on?
Well, what's going on is that you've got a number of MPs, indeed a majority of MPs in the House of Commons, who, rightly or wrongly, and we can get into the ins and outs of it if we like, but rightly or wrongly, sincerely believe that a no-deal Brexit will be hugely damaging to the country, hugely damaging to the economy, and who aren't prepared to let it happen. They're not prepared to let it happen in this Parliament with this composition. And the only way of stopping that is to take control of the House of Commons and to pass... it's unconventional, but to pass an act of Parliament that stops that happening, forces the Prime Minister to go. And it's only once that's happened that the Labour Party is prepared to contemplate having an election. Now, obviously, that election could result in Boris Johnson winning an overall majority, which would enable him to take Britain out of the EU with or without a deal fairly soon. That is absolutely a possible consequence. But the point is that if that does happen, it will happen because the Parliament of the day has the votes to allow that to happen. And the Parliament of the day today simply doesn't.
But Tom, you know, look, that was a very good argument you put together there. But 2 days ago, when all this was known, Jeremy Corbyn was saying, I want an election, bring it on. And now he's been silenced. What's that all about?
Well, in 2 days ago, Boris Johnson was saying, I don't want an election. So
I don't think he does. He doesn't want one until after October the 31st. I'm pretty certain about that.
Sorry, Jeremy Corbyn doesn't.
No, Boris Johnson.
No, he doesn't. Well, Boris Johnson, depends what you mean by want, he put forward a motion tonight to have an election on October the 15th, so he does want one to that extent.
But I think that's because of the circumstances he's now been put in, because I think, in fairness to him, and he obviously has his critics, don't you think he's made it clear he's just not going back to the EU to ask for an extension. He has no choice in many senses to say, you're doing something I cannot do, let's take it to the people. And that's what I think. Look, you and I may very well look at the intricacies and the niceties around what's going on, but I'd be very interested to see the public's reaction as to say, why not?
Well, he made a really clear pledge that that whatever else happens, Britain was going to be leaving the EU on the 31st without a deal. That was sort of the top line of his premiership. You know, they've installed a countdown clock in Conservative Central Office.
Oh, they always have one of those.
it's looking a little bit forlorn now because it seems to have the wrong date on it. And, you know, as it stands, it looks like the Prime Minister won't be able to make that happen without breaking the law, and he can't do that because he's the Prime Minister, so he can't do what he promised.
Well, now, he could bring another motion back. Sorry to cut your term there. He could either bring a one-liner on the Fixed Term Parliament Act, which, without getting technical, because I think we'll just put people to sleep, it basically could give him another crack at this when he only needs a majority of one to get it through.
Yeah, absolutely. He's within his rights to try and do that, and that might work or it might not. I don't think it's not a foregone conclusion, by the way, that could get through, because if you get all the opposition parties plus the 21 MPs that he's just expelled from his own party, then he hasn't got a majority.
Well, they might want to curry favour and come back. You never know.
Well, they might, but as things stand, if I'm an MP with a job and continuing to have an MP salary, and I'm not a member of a party anymore and can't stand, I'm unlikely to vote for the election that's going to end my career tomorrow, when I could hang on for another fortnight. But no, you're right. Absolutely, that could he could win that vote. We'll have to see what happens.
And if he doesn't, what then? I mean, if you were a Labour strategist, you'd be thinking, right, okay, he's going to lose that because he just kicked out 20 of his own MPs, so not much chance of that. So what actually happens next? What could that Prime Minister do to try and get his wish of either a general election or coming out on the 31st with a new law in place? I mean, you say he might break the law. I just don't think that's reasonable.
I don't think that's reasonable either. I don't think he can do that. And to be fair to Boris Johnson, he said in Parliament yesterday that he wouldn't. So that's fine. Well, I don't think he can. But what he can do is, once this law has gone through, which he'll have to abide by, he'll have to get an extension. But then I think it's pretty clear that you know, when Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party have been saying for months, we want an election, they're sincere about that, genuinely, but they also want to stop no deal. Now, this has come at a precise moment where it was impossible to do both at once. So as soon as the no deal issue has gone, then I'm very confident that Labour will be completely on board for having an election in whatever date.
But then they could back his one-liner that names the day. because it would be pretty hard to change that.
If the Act has gone through, that is possible. Yeah, I'm not privy to what the Labour strategists are thinking, so I wouldn't say that that is an impossible thing to happen, but the law has to...
Well, let me ask you something else, because you and I, we could go around in circles about this, because we're guessing like everybody else.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
At the end of the day, I've been saying this all night, in many ways, the arguments about what's the effect of no deal and is it a good thing, a bad thing or whatever, at this stage... I actually think they're quite irrelevant. I think this now has become a democratic battle. Now, we had the, what I call the fake coup when everyone was getting upset about democracy. I think there's a lot of people, and I would love to know if you sense this or not, regardless of your view on Remain or Leave, whatever it may be. We are really essentially now as close as ever saying to those who voted successfully to leave in the referendum, your vote doesn't count. This can't be good for politics.
Well, I think it is pretty disastrous the way this whole thing has been handled. I think just go back to the referendum in the first place. I've always been highly sceptical of the idea of referendums as a way of solving complex questions like this. You know, if the British public want to leave the EU, then they need to elect a majority government that is committed to leaving the EU, and so far they never have. But that aside, the important thing now is that we elect a parliament that is capable of doing something. The current parliament has not been capable of passing a Brexit deal simply because, you know, and this is a boring arithmetical point, not enough MPs on all sides of the House have been convinced that any deal that's been brought forward is acceptable.
And that is where I think the democratic argument goes again, because there are a lot of people saying, look, you guys normally make the decision, but you delegated this decision to us and you said you'd do what we said. And now, if you look at it from outside in, they're saying, hang on, you're arguing over whether we want the chocolate with the candy in or we want the chocolate with the bitter almonds in it. The fact is, we want the bloody chocolate. Now get out and do your job. So they feel Parliament delegated the decision and hasn't delivered. Anyway, listen, Tom, got Will here. No, I haven't. He's gone. I've got John O'Connell here from the Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Alliance. He'd love to have a word.
Hi Tom, a quick question on what Labour do next, particularly with an election. Given the equivocation over whether they accept an election and you know where we are with no deal and all the rest of it, how does Jeremy Corbyn square that with Labour Brexiteer voters, of which there are many, who would quite like to see this thing over and done with, saying no to an election? How would he square that with all those voters?
Well, I think the saying no to an election thing, I genuinely think electorally that just is not a problem for a very basic logical reason, which is that the people who are upset about it now can't vote against Jeremy Corbyn on the basis that he's blocked an election until there is an election. And when there is an election, he hasn't blocked an election because there's an election. You see what I mean? Right?
I tell you what. Look, it's 12:15, man. Come on.
But I do just think that that is not a problem for Corbyn. I accept the wider point, which is that there is a significant number of leave-inclined Labour voters who don't want to see Labour transformed into a Remain party, which a lot of its activists in particular do. Like the fact is, that's the problem that Labour has had for the last 3 years, and why it's sort of the saga of its Brexit policy has been so convoluted, and they've come to a position now, which I may or may not agree with, but which is if we win the election, Labour says we will negotiate a Brexit deal on the basis that we've been talking about for quite some time, and then we will put that deal to a referendum, and it will either happen or it won't. So there will be a possibility of Brexit under a Labour government. There will also be a possibility of Remain, and the idea is that keeps the options open for both Remain inclined and Leave inclined Labour supporters. Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily a strategy that's going to win, but that's where they are. I would add, though, that in terms of trying to hold together an electoral coalition, the Conservative electoral coalition that won a majority in 2015 was one that contained a vast number of people who went on to support Remain in the referendum, including, you know, the then Prime Minister and then Chancellor. So, you know, a lot of quite significant...
It also had a lot of...
They've got to rebuild their coalition as well.
Well, I mean, you know, Conservatives win when they build an alliance of what some would say are working-class aspirational and middle classes. And the thing is, I just think the old rules are out, Tom. Tom, you've been very tolerant of being introduced as a reporter at Guido Fawkes. I mean, I hope you get the clip and frame that somewhere. But thank you. And again, our apologies for that. But you've been great. It's been fantastic to talk to you. And thanks so much for joining us this evening. So, not bad. We kind of... I think there was a consensus there that he actually wants an election as well. I'm not sure. He rather threw me a little bit with his 12-15 rant almost about Jeremy Corbyn's views on the election. And you need an election to get an election, but you might not get that election. So you get this. Well, I was just going, no, this is too much for me. I need strong coffee. You're listening to Nick Dubois. I'm in the studio here with John O'Connell, Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Allowance. Coming up from 1 a.m, it's Paul Ross, but still more political chat to get through until then. And next, I'll be speaking to Craig Prescott, who will explain the options the Prime Minister has to force a general election. And I knew by the end of this programme, we would get that worked out.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
I love this sort of text that I'm about to read you, because you know Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland basically thinks every Scottish voter voted to remain. Well, listen to this, Nicola. I believe that we should leave the EU with or without a deal on October the 31st. The people voted to leave the EU and that vote should be respected. I'm Scottish and the SNP do not speak for me. I have a Lib Dem as my MP, but I voted Brexit on the EU referendum. We need to leave 3110 regardless. And I don't know who you are, but thank you. I'll send that to Nicola Sturgeon. In fact, we should... Come on, Nicola, if you're listening, come on in, join us. And I will now convince you that there are Scottish people who do actually want to leave. Well, you know, I said at the beginning of this show, it's actually one of the most historic days. I'm not sure we've all noticed that yet. And of course, the peers of the realm are working away as we speak, apparently surviving on Quality Street. I'm not quite sure why I'm plugging Quality Street, but that is actually what they are apparently doing. I'm not sure if that's a good thing. They'll all get a sugar rush and maybe come up with some crazy idea to try and, I don't know, stop the government doing what the government's trying to do. But what are the options for the Prime Minister? It's, as I keep saying, we are getting into uncharted territory if a bill becomes an act and he is under that act directed to go and ask for an extension. He's made it perfectly clear he won't. There are one or two other options being talked about out there. All have a measure and a chance of success. But I do feel like, even as an ex-parliamentarian, fumbling in the dark here, along with a lot of colleagues. So I'm hopeful that Craig Prescott, our next guest, a constitutional lawyer and director of the Centre of Parliament and Public Law at the University of Winchester. That title alone gives me confidence, Craig, that you can tell us what is going to happen next and what the options are. Good evening to you.
Hello, Nick.
I should say good morning, actually. And
well,
thank
yes,
you.
It is morning. Though.
And thank you for joining us. We are in a funny place, aren't we? It feels like uncharted territory is just around the corner.
Yes, well, we are in a funny place. I suppose, ultimately, we have a government that, in any substantive sense, doesn't have the confidence of the House of Commons. Mm. And ordinarily, you will have an election and pre-fixed-term Parliaments Act. The Prime Minister probably would have turned around and said, I don't want to sort of go to the EU for an extension. Let's have an election. There will be no way to stop that. You know, the Prime Minister would be granted dissolution. You'd have an election and it would be sorted that way. You don't have that now with the Fixed-Term Parliaments Act.
And the Fixed-Term Parliaments Act was never envisaged, Craig, for this situation, was it? It just was never envisaged, really.
It was probably never really thought through, because the whole purpose of the Fixed-Term Parliaments Act was to
underpin the coalition that came in 2010.
Right.
Neither the Lib Dems nor the Conservatives wanted the other to be able to pull the plug on the coalition. So it surely took for 5 years and was very successful at that in many ways. But it does mean now that the government want to hold an election, or they say they're forced to, but it seems like they want to, but you can't meet the 66% figure at the moment. And the other option is that the government could introduce legislation sort of to override the fixed-term parliament.
And is this what we call the notwithstanding the fixed-term parliament act, basically we'll have an election on October the 15th, and it's simple as that?
Precisely that. But the problem is that, one, that needs the support of the opposition, because the government is now well short of a majority.
It would need a one vote over 50% of the MPs, basically, to win, to get that through, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be a simple majority, an ordinary piece of legislation. It would sort of, as you say, set the date for the 15th of October. The problem is that, like all legislation, it could be amended.
Mm.
And the opposition could table, well, we'll have 1st of November. That would do very nicely. So that's not without risks. We could look at sort of another 66% motion. Jeremy Corbyn has said that once this extension legislation gets royal assent, he's more minded for an election.
But can I explore that with you? But just to make sure it's understanding, because there was some confusion even in the Labour Party about this at one point. But it seems that the emerging position is they're saying if this comes into law, the bill that is going through the House of Lords as we speak, then we will have an election. Is it really as simple as that? Because then surely they would back either, as you say, a 66% fixed term Parliament Act or the one liner. That should be it, shouldn't it?
Well, they will both lead you to the same direction. The 66% vote would allow the Prime Minister to set the date of the election, which may pose Labour a problem, or they may choose legislation that might fix the date.
Mm.
So it depends on what's going on between the parties there. What I do wonder is, with this legislation going through the House of Lords, and there has been some discussion of this, but I don't know what's happened, is that maybe the Conservatives will call off the filibusters that the sort of passed all these or tried to pass these motions and say, well, let's have the election on the 15th. Let's stop playing with this. Let's negotiate.
You mean that they convince, but they don't trust Boris Johnson, and this is
the
bottom line. So is there anything that could, so normally, if a Prime Minister or the leader of the House stood up and said, alongside the passing of this bill, and we will have the election on October the 15th, that's enough. That normally would be enough. But is it really simply, we don't believe you? So how could they bind their hand to have it on the 15th, if this shortcut approach that you're talking about, by coming to an agreement in the Lords to ditch all the filibusters, is there a mechanism for binding their hand?
The only way would be legislation.
Which is not exactly... No. You can do it quite quickly, but, you know, as we've seen.
You could be looking at passing that Monday or Tuesday now. I don't think anything's been tabled to be debated tomorrow, so... So you're looking Monday, Tuesday. So the proroguing Parliament will be delayed, but that might allow this legislation to go through the House of Lords. So you could sort of see the outlines of an agreement and a deal.
But it needs the political will, doesn't it?
But it does need the political will. And the stumbling block would the election be held, say, on the 15th, or would it be after the 31st of October?
Well, you see, I think if it bound the Prime Minister's hand to ask for an extension, if it came on the 31st of October, he's just not going to accept that. And that is a red line too far, I suspect. So it would then be have an election in time for someone, the winner, who can either overturn this commitment to extend it, that would be Boris Johnson, or a Labour Party that obviously have got other plans. Have we got that right? Is that depressingly what we're looking at? The only options.
I think
That's the most logical solution. The problem is, will Jeremy Corbyn be able to bring the Labour Party alongside that? Because there's been rumours and talk that you know, there's a real fight within Labour on that issue. So, you know, it's how many soldiers can Jeremy Corbyn bring with him to sort of get that agreement.
Can Parliament survive this?
Ultimately, there will have to be an election at some point. You know, a government that's got, by my calculations, 289 MPs out of 650 can't survive for very long. Mm. Fundamentally, that's, you know, so far short of the majority. There's lots of independents and what have you, but you can't see, outside of Brexit, the government being able to do anything substantive.
Do you think the Institute of Parliament will recover sufficiently in time for people to start having confidence again in it?
Now, that's really interesting. If we have another hung parliament, which is likely, then that could be a real difficult problem. You know, how does Parliament move on from this?
I mean, my own theory is actually that notwithstanding Brexit, but it'd be easier if Brexit was completed. I think if you end up with a heart-hung Parliament, there a sensible move, I hate to say this as a Conservative, if it was really, is actually to form a Parliament of consensus through maybe even a national government to help restore it. But you'd have to settle Brexit first.
Yes, yes. I think that would be, you know, can't really do anything in terms of restoring Parliament's reputation until Brexit has been sorted one way or another.
Exactly.
And so, you know, we are stuck and everyone knows we're stuck, and the solution is sort of still eluding everyone.
Craig, I'm going to try and find some optimism in that somewhere, but thank you so much for being a realist and not indulging in, shall we say, fantasy constitutional and parliamentary politics. That was Craig Prescott, constitutional lawyer and director of the Centre of Parliament and Public Law at the University of Winchester. I'm Nick Dubois. You are listening to Talk Radio, and we're going to have a quick short break now, and we will be back for the last half hour of the show.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
This is Talk Radio.
Well, I'm not sure I'm that much wiser. 2.5 hours later, I think we can safely say that what we're actually looking at is a period of huge uncertainty about where this goes next. What I am certain about is that we are witnessing in Parliament, and I understand why the Prime Minister is so angry about this. We are seeing, for the first time this country had a plan, for the first time this country had a way of settling Brexit. It was leave with a deal or leave without a deal on the 31st of October. That has been trashed. Now, the Prime Minister has to find a way out of it. He offered a general election. A chicken-led Labour Party did not want it. People who abandoned the Labour Party and left the Conservative Party and went to form other groups, other small groups of MPs, will lose their seats, so they voted out of self-interest not to have a general election. The answer is to have a general election if the House of Commons forces on the Prime Minister, then ties his hand to seek an extension, something I have every confidence he will not do. However, if he has that election, what is he letting himself in for? What are the polls really telling us? And what is happening on the ground? It's no longer simple these days. And someone who has spent years putting together something that I know candidates up and down the country stare at on almost a daily basis is a superb website called Electoral Calculus. I've been guilty of using it myself. We have the founder, Martin Baxter, on the line. Martin, good evening to you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening, Nick. Great to speak to you.
Well, I had my little rant, and I feel better for that, so thank you for that. But, as you know, in the old days, you know, we used to talk in a little bit of a swing here. We'd see something, and we could predict how many seats were going to fall, et cetera, et cetera. It's much more complex now, isn't it? What's going on with the polls at the moment. And if we have a general election in what, about a month's time, 5-6 weeks' time, what's electoral calculus telling you?
Well, yes, we've come a long way from the days of the simple swingometer between left and right, haven't we? And just got two major parties, but both of them less popular than they were, and the growth of the Lib Dems and the Brexit Party. So let's look at the kind of basic landscape that we've got across the country at the moment. So the first thing to say, and this is an important fact that sometimes gets lost, is that both of the big two parties, both Conservative and Labour, are much less popular than they were 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The Conservatives have lost about 10%, which in normal times would be catastrophic, but Labour have managed to lose even more. They've lost about 16% support. And so that means that, slightly paradoxically, the Conservatives are doing less horribly than Labour relatively, and so are gaining a bit. So if the polls are right, that lead of 8% for the Conservatives, that's not bad, actually, and that could be okay for them, but it's a bit touch and go.
Go ahead, John.
Martin, hi, John O'Connell from the Taxpayers Alliance here. I just wanted to get your view on whether you think this is a genuine realignment where we'll see new parties form in due course, or whether this Brexit thing is merely a blip and we'll return to normal two-party, possibly three-party politics in a couple of years, maybe.
Well, that's a great question, isn't it? I mean, certainly at the time of the European elections, it looked like realignment was coming, that the Brexit Party were ahead of the Conservatives and the Liberals were, level, maybe ahead of Labour. That's gone back a bit. So although the big parties are wounded, they're still bigger than their rivals. So it's not yet having a realignment in terms of the parties. But what we are seeing inside kind of voters' heads, if we can try and look in there, is that people's decisions about voting, which used to be driven in the old days really by, class, so, socioeconomic position and sort of economic left-right ideas, are much more driven by the nationalist, globalist ideas, leave, remain, and so on. So, and we're seeing that really a bit with the events in Parliament this week where, over 20, what you might call internationalist conservatives have lost, been kicked out of the party, because they voted against the government. And that, in a way, is kind of a realignment within the Conservative Party. It is, as kind of critics are saying, becoming sort of the Brexit Party light. Well, maybe that's a bit harsh, but there's something in the fact that they are becoming more of a Leave Party.
Well, let me ask you a little bit about that, because obviously the Brexit Party is actually a threat to the Conservatives' overall majority, and a lot of people accuse him of almost pandering too much, Boris Johnson, to the Brexit Party. Is that there's been a shift, it's been favourable, but is it still quite substantial as we sit this side of Brexit?
Well, there's certainly what was called the Boris bounce has shown the Conservatives taking votes away from the Brexit Party more than Theresa May was able to do. So on recent opinion polls, Conservatives won by 33, Brexit on 13. So that's if 46% of the country is voting for one or the other of those, but the Conservatives are getting most of the votes. And I think it is fairly obvious that the Conservative strategy is to get more of those votes. So they can get more of the 13% of people who are voting Brexit to join the Conservative column, then it can, that just helps the Conservatives in the general election. So it looks like they're looking to take votes more from the Brexit Party than, say, to grab them off Labour.
Martin, let's just imagine I've got you in front of Boris Johnson, okay? And you're going to get this question and need your answer. He says, Martin, do I go for it? Do I go for the election?
That is a good question. Let me just say one thing before I give a definite answer to that, but I will give an answer. That the Conservatives roughly need a lead over Labour of about 6% for a bare majority and 9% for a good majority. Currently they're on 8, that's in the middle. But that 8 disguises things. That 8 is an average across all the pollsters. If you look at the pollsters, there's two different groups, and so I'm going to get a little bit technical here, but the pollsters are divided. One group thinks the Conservative lead is quite large. It's about 11%. That's pollsters like YouGov and Ipsos Mori. And that would mean a big Conservative majority. And another group of pollsters, equally respectable, like Comres and Servation and Opinion, have a Conservative lead of about 5%, which wouldn't even be a majority. And so at the moment, that polling gap, the pollster division, makes very hard to say. If you get up an Ipsos Moria, right, then yes, I'd say that Boris Johnson, go for it, and it's probably going to be all right. If the other pollsters are right, it's more tricky.
Martin?
And, of course, that's to say nothing about what might happen in the campaign where...
Well, of course, of course.
We felt a few years ago that in the campaign quite a lot of things can change.
Well, all I can say is, Martin, I'm not sure how helpful that answer would be to him at the moment to know that difference, but I've certainly learned something from that, and I shall look with interest as the continuing gap difference between them. Martin Baxter, very good of you to join us at this hour, founder of Electoral Calculus. If you are at all interested in how polls play out in particular seats or in particular areas, he is definitely the man to learn from, and his website is electoralcalculus, I think it's .co.uk. Okay, let's go and have a chat with Pablo in Newcastle. Pablo, good evening to you.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you for calling us.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, I know how you're situated in this conversation.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just think, I mean, 2 points, mainly just the Dominic Cummings effect, and just the kind of willing, not duplicity, but just Bob Johnson specifically seems to be goading.
You think he's pushing them and saying, come on, put up or shut up, sort of thing?
Well, yes, but not in a way to kind of, you know, bolster his own position. It's more to specifically fall into the trap of, well, if you go this way, then we'll probably have to do a hard Brexit because of this, that, or the other. Or the alternative being, well, maybe if the general election puts in a position where we'll have to postpone Brexit to a degree, then the hope is that the split of the, you know, having a good deal or having a referendum that will split amongst the left-wing parties, and the right-wing will be quite happy as they are. My concern, obviously, with that, and my hope initially, was that obviously the right-wing vote would be split with the Brexit Party, ignoring the fact that obviously voting in a general election for a Brexit Party is a ridiculous concept, in my own opinion.
Mm.
But my main concern, and the kind of weird confidence that seems to be shown by Boris Johnson, considering all the
hurdles he has to overcome.
Well, my concern, and I don't know, obviously, you've got the inside track on this, but the Brexit Party, considering that you're kind of aligned on message with the Brexit Party at the moment, is there a plan to potentially fold in the Brexit Party into the Tory Party to gain a majority?
Well, I think you're asking a really good question. But I think, actually, if you ask Nigel Farage this, and John, you might agree with me, he would say he thinks Boris Johnson is going to go for a withdrawal agreement and bring a withdrawal agreement back to Parliament, and therefore you shouldn't trust Boris Johnson and you should vote for the Brexit Party. They're actually not aligned at this point in time. I think I've got that right, John, haven't I? This is John O'Connell, who's with me in the studio.
Yeah, that's broadly right. And like you said, it's a very good question from Pablo. Nigel Farage doesn't trust Boris Johnson, and he keeps repeating the line that Boris Johnson voted for Theresa May's withdrawal agreement on the third round. And
which is back on the table.
Well, you're talking about tonight's vote, weren't you, when someone tried to put through an amendment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not sure that'll actually see the light of day, actually, but we'll see.
No. But I think the Brexit Party currently see the strong talk on no deal as merely that, strong talk. Mm. And they don't necessarily think that the Conservatives will follow through with it. So if they were going to fold in, there would need to be much more open and obvious move towards no deal from the Conservatives.
I think the Brexit Party would expect to see him just say no deal's my policy, and that is not going to happen. No deal is if we don't get a deal, he will go for no deal. But let me just fill you in one more thing, yeah, and then come back at me. It's coming out of number 10 that if, for example, Boris Johnson came back with a withdrawal agreement without the backstop, that if the ERG, the people on the so-called the hard-line Brexiteers, didn't back them, it's becoming clear that they're saying that they would withdraw the whip from them. So I think, again, that wouldn't necessarily be an attraction for the Brexit Party. Anyway, Pablo, your turn.
Well, I was going to say, and I appreciate that. And in many ways, I think, you know, if you have pulled the whip from everybody, then what have you got left?
Well, the centre at that rate.
Well, exactly. But I think and as you say, like, it seems to be very clear that Boris's position is very much a case of, oh, it's no deal, but I'm secretly hoping at some point they're going to come in and say, hold on, here's a deal, oh, we're really sorry, everything's all right. But as time goes on, it becomes more and more apparent that he doesn't seem to have an option for if that doesn't happen. So the thing that he's actually pushing for as a no-deal Brexit, in the hope that there's going to be some sort of barter at the last minute, if that does actually come through, as he is stating, then he doesn't actually have any formal plan as to what to do if that does happen. And then using the general election as a goading technique of, oh, well, if we can make it a national vote, then it's going to be very Brexit-orientated.
So well, actually, let me ask you this, Pablo, because it slightly worries me. In 2017, Theresa May wanted an election all about Brexit, and she got the complete opposite. I do sense that if we have a general election now, it is going to be very strongly about Brexit. But is a general election ever about one thing? And that's what troubles me about a general election. I think we're going to end up with one, okay? Because I think there is only now a democratic solution to this in terms of a general election vote. But, you know, would you vote just on Brexit for a general election?
Oh, never. I mean, I think voting on an individual policy, I mean, that's like, you know, that's your abortionist and things like that. That's you know, people with extreme views are the people who who vote on single policies. And I like do a general overview. And I think in my mind, I think it's, you know, with Boris, it's very much, I don't want to call him Boris, Mr. Johnson.
It's funny how people do, but that's a strength for him.
Bojo.
okay.
With him, I think it's very much a case of be careful what you wish for. Because, you know, I think if it does become like a very much a Brexit general election, if it does come along to that, then whereas in the past they kind of the UKIP, the Brexit Party at a later date, but the UKIP and the Conservatives kind of mobilised a lot of people who weren't traditional voters, who haven't voted in previous general elections, and you use the Brexit thing to kind of mobilise them. But then you look at the sign up from the young people, and I think, you know, there's a very good likelihood that the massive sign from young people who are literally going, well, you know, the percentage you like signed up for the general election and then signed up for the referendum. I think now you're seeing a massive surge of new voters signing up.
It's going to be interesting. They're not all going to Jeremy Corbyn, though,
not
having said that.
Not necessarily, but I think if you look at the general dynamic, it does seem to be a case of, you know, it's like, you know, if somebody offered me...
Pablo,
you know,
I'm just going to... I've got it for time reasons, I've got to interrupt, but I'm just going to put one fraction of caution in there. I think someone as old as me, who's been in politics as long as me, I think I'm going to stop trying to personally prejudge where some voters are going, because I've been consistently wrong. Pablo, that was a great call. Thank you very much indeed for calling us. I'm Nick Dubois. You are listening to Talk Radio. Paul Ross, up from 1 a.m. and a final bit from me and John O'Connell after the break.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions. This is Talk Radio.
Well, thank you, Stan and Bob's dad, for your tweet. Nick loved the show. He means you as well, John, I assure you. Nick loved the show. A breath of fresh air at this time of night. Normally switch off till Paul Ross comes on. Well, Paul Ross will be coming on soon, so you've got a long night ahead of you, and thank you for that tweet. John? We haven't solved the world's problems. I think Martin Baxter gave us the clearest indication that this election is not a done deal, but Boris isn't in a bad position. But we, I can't, if I said to you what's going to happen in the next 3 days, can you answer?
Not at all, but it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall inside Number 10 tonight, because I wonder to what extent Number 10 strategists are quite happy with Parliament being painted as being very obstructive to Brexit, you know, now, so obviously so, and whether they're actually thinking, right, you know, beyond the bubble, beyond Westminster and beyond BBC News headlines,
yeah.
people are absolutely furious, and this fury will keep growing and growing and growing as long as they keep seeing these headlines.
Do you know, I think everyone loves to have a, well, not everyone, quite a lot of people love to have a pop at Dominic Cummings. I say, you know, they're all saying, what a bad day he's had today. I said, hang on, you know, you're looking at one battle. There's a clear political strategy here. Mm-hmm. I don't think this guy is stupid at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that they are probably, not unreasonably, from day one, Boris Johnson has understood how fed up people are, that the political classes, the politicians have not delivered. Mm-hmm. And he's articulated that extremely well. And frankly, when they talk about if there is an election of people versus the parliament, you know, that is really what you are talking about here. And the people will need to restate what they want, and he hopes they'll do it through a general election. And I can see it working. It's high risk.
And, you know, over the past few weeks, you've seen Boris say all sorts of things about a domestic agenda. I don't want an election. I've had this forced on me, all these kind of things. And they're going to be clipped and shared widely on Facebook when this election campaign starts, and on social media and all the rest.
Have you noticed how much social media Boris Johnson's team are doing? It's huge.
It's enormous.
And it's coming out. It's been effective because I've seen people complaining about it. Now, we never got onto that. Jeremy Corbyn wiped the floor in 2017.
Yeah.
I think they've had a really good social media campaign.
I think that's right. And a lot of the power of Jeremy Corbyn's social media campaign in 17 was lots of organic sharing, which basically means, you know, you're not paying for it. It's actually being done because people agree with the message and are sharing it among their networks. And I think with Boris Johnson's messages, a lot of that's going to start to happen with the pro-Brexit networks. Very strong start to what will be quite a fascinating campaign.
But he had his first PMQs today. He's taken a bit of stick for it because they're saying, oh, it wasn't as polished as it should be, etc. I'll tell you, all these critics, I'd love them to get up there and do it. What did you think?
It's Boris, isn't it? So he's never going to be, a David Miliband type or a Tony Blair type or even a David Cameron type. He's always going to have his own personal style. And I'm not sure to what extent, again, sort of Westminster strategist types look at this and say, oh, you had a bad day. People out in the country might find him a bit more irreverent, a bit more sort of approachable.
I think all the critics have got it wrong, because when people have for 2 years, 3 years, they still do it. They say Jeremy Corbyn, isn't he rubbish at PMQs, etc., etc. And what they do, and you almost see him prepare it, is he gets a little clip. They know exactly what he's going to say, and that clip is out on the social media. Mm-hmm. And he's not talking to the people in the House of Commons. Yeah. He's not even talking to the people who are watching PMQs, which most of us, a bit of a sad bunch, really, mm-hmm. if we do it all the time. He's getting his clip for social media out there, and I picked it up today. I thought, that's his clip, and I haven't checked to see if I'm right yet. Mm. And I think Boris Johnson will have a very effective clip in there, and it'll be going out on social media. I'm surprised I haven't seen it already.
Yeah.
And it will be reinforcing, basically, I want to give the people the choice. You don't. I want out on 31st of October. You want to stop it.
I think that's right. And neither will thank me for this comparison, but of Boris nor Jeremy Corbyn, but it's quite Trumpian in its way. It's speaking beyond the established media channels, be that in the printed press or on broadcast, and talking to people directly. And it's very, very effective, as Trump is proving, as Corbyn proved in 17, and as Boris is proving now, and Nigel Farage has constantly proved.
Well, and do you know, if it was a Barack Obama who had run a operation where he basically ignored the mainstream media and went through social media, everyone would be hailing it as an extraordinary achievement we should all be learning from. And the point is, it is a different world. Hugely different world. Do you know, I was listening to Martin Baxter. Have you ever been daft enough to go knocking on doors in elections?
No,
I don't recommend it, because do it. It's a great thing to do as a politician because it's a great leveller.
Mm-hmm.
But, God, you know, I remember many years ago you used to be able to even walk past a garden and you'd say they're conservative, you know, and you would draw these astonishing conclusions from what was in their window, what was on their door, the type of door knocker. And sadly, 8 out of 10 times, you were right, which was how it was. Oh, my goodness, you know, it's changed. It's come a long way since there. And those days, went a long time ago. How we talk to people, I think, is extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, people rave about Twitter, but I use that. I won in the 2015 election the Twitter campaign,
mm-hmm.
but I lost the election.
Yeah.
It was talking to loads of people. It's much more targeted these days.
I think Twitter has wonderful sides to it and it has its uses. But in terms of hardcore campaigning, you are essentially speaking to people who already agree with you anyway.
Echo chamber.
Indeed so, and other mediums, Facebook and, you know, other mediums that younger people are using that I don't even know about, you know, all of this kind of stuff. You're in convincing mode as opposed to, you know, preaching mode. So it's much more effective, although Twitter has its wonderful uses, of course, being able to tweet into your show and tell you how wonderful it was tonight.
And have you enjoyed tonight?
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. On a very momentous day, it's great to be part of the conversation.
You've been fantastic. You've been asking all the right questions, yeah. You know. Now, oh goodness, we've got an invader. Who's this? What a bright shirt.
And I thought I'd wake you both up. Good morning, John. I'm Paul.
Good morning.
Great to see you again, Nick. Out of prison and everything.
And look, I'm
taking the tag off you as well. Fantastic.
I've just read out this tweet. Said, Nick, love the show tonight. A breath of fresh air at this time of night. Normally switch off till Paul Ross comes on.
Well, good morning, whoever that was. Probably my father or somebody. One of your brothers.
Stan and Bob's dad.
Stan and Bob's dad. Good. Well, we've got some great stuff on the way this morning. We are going to continue your politics discussion going as well. We've got somebody from Politics Home on to give us an overview of their take on the day. We're also talking, though, to a leading academic from St. Andrews University. He's from the Department of Physics and Astronomy, but he's working training sniffer bees who are fantastically accurate at sniffing out explosives and they think drugs. It's an amazing story. It involves training the bees via kind of Pavlovian responses. They send them over to pick up TNT vapors and they can work out, without using sniffer dogs, where landmines are.
This will save the bees. You know, yeah. They're under threat, aren't they? Well, this is like a new life, yep, for them.
And you know, it's the first radio interview I think this guy's given. Also, I want to give you both a tingle.
Oh, okay.
It's an autonomous meridian sensory response. It's huge on YouTube. There's a book out today by a woman who's our special guest, and she's got a tingle shed. She's a mum. She's been doing this for years, makes money out of it. And basically, if people have trouble sleeping or relaxing, she talks in a kind voice, and she gives them the sounds you wouldn't normally hear, but are comforting, like this. Listen. The sound you get when you're getting your hair cut, and you're there and you're happy and you're focused and you're part of your troubles. And she also, this woman, she's so dedicated, she will not eat for at least an hour before going into a recording soundproof tingle shed in case it picks up her belly rumblings.
And what do you do? Do you get a tape or something?
Well, you can go online. If you look up Whispers Red, there are loads of them. She's Emma Whispers Red. Emma Smith is her name. And you'll see her talking to the camera in her shed. She'll do things like make a cup of tea, almost like Zen in the Art of Tea Making, pour it, stir marvelous. It gently, chink it, just to give you that kind of comfort zone.
Paul, it's going to be fantastic. Looking forward to your show. Keep me on company as I go home. John,
thanks for the
so
weekend,
much.
Sir.
Thank you very much. Short back and sides. I'm Nick Dubois. Thank you for listening tonight on Talk Radio. What a day it's been. And I'm sure tomorrow it'll be just as eventful. Paul Ross next.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions. This is Talk Radio.